I will call the meeting to order, and let's start out with the roll call. If you're here, please check in. Margaret, are you checking in?
Yeah.
Okay. We have 28 board members present and a couple more that are going to be joining us, starting with Don Meyer, who was not here last month. Marion will swear in Don.
Please repeat after me. I, Don Meyer.
I, Don Meyer.
Have been elected to the office of?
Have been elected to the office of?
County Board Supervisor, District 17.
County Board Supervisor, District 17.
Swear or affirm that I will support?
Swear or affirm that I will support?
The Constitution of the United States?
The Constitution of the United States.
And the Constitution of the State of Wisconsin?
The Constitution of the State of Wisconsin.
And will faithfully and impartially?
And will faithfully and impartially?
Discharge the duties of said office?
Discharge the duties of said office.
To the best of my ability.
To the best of my ability.
So help me God.
So help me God.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Chairman Doyle.
I have one appointment for our vacant county board position. District, what is that, 32? Somebody that I think we're all familiar with and are happy to have back with us. I am appointing Arlene Benrud to the position of County Board Supervisor.
Does that require a second? Does this require a second?
Raise your right hand and repeat after me. I, Arlene Benrud.
I, Arlene Benrud.
Who have been appointed to the office of?
Appointed to the office of
County Board Supervisor, District 32.
County Board Supervisor, District 32.
Swear or affirm?
Swear or affirm.
That I will support the Constitution?
That I will support the Constitution.
Of the United States?
Of the United States.
And the Constitution of the State of Wisconsin?
And the Constitution of the State of Wisconsin.
And will faithfully and impartially?
I will faithfully and impartially.
Discharge the duties of said office?
Discharge the duties of said office.
To the best of my ability?
To the best of my ability.
So help me God.
So help me God.
Congratulations.
Welcome back, Arlene. So that gets us up to what, 30? All right. We have 30 board members present at this point. Let's go on to the County Board Chair Report. First thing I want to mention is supervisors who are not on the board anymore, we did send out an expression of our thanks to each of them, and I want to mention the number of years of service that we had benefited from with regard to each. Pat Shippers was 2 years, Jason Gillette, 2 years, J.C. Gamroth, 3 years, Brian Kapanke, 5 years, Terry Hansen, 6 years, and Jim Ursham, 22 years. So we're very appreciative of all of the years of service from those folks. County Board Supervisor, oh wait, before we do that, Supervisor Report, Brian Fukuda, I asked him to tell the board about a plaque that I received on behalf of some of our staff members and our Economic Development Committee yesterday, and so Brian has the plaque, and we'll explain to the board why we got it.
All right. This is the plaque that was awarded yesterday at lunchtime. It is from the La Crosse Area Convention and Visitors Bureau. Every year they have an awards lunch, and this year they named La Crosse County as their outstanding partner of the year for 2007. That is an award that I think is pretty significant, as we pride ourselves on being very cooperative and collaborating with other agencies in the area. So they primarily chose us. We worked on kind of three primary projects with the La Crosse Area Convention and Visitors Bureau last year. The first of which was a classic county roads brochure. And for that, Dennis Osgood from our highway commissioner worked quite a bit with the Convention and Visitors Bureau to identify routes, and then Carl Green and I helped to do the mapping of the routes, and Carl wrote some of the language that went in the brochure, and then our Economic Development Fund through our tourism promotion budget item were able to help fund the creation of those brochures. Then Carl also worked with the Convention and Visitors Bureau on a project called the First Impressions Study, where we have a group of individuals from another community come in here, and then we send a group of individuals to that community, and then we kind of exchange our impressions of the community upon coming in and pretending like you're looking to start a business, or you're looking to you're a tourist, or just kind of doing an overall first impression of the community, from everything from driving into the community, the scenery, the development patterns, those types of things, to the way they were treated when they went into the Chamber of Commerce or to various county offices or that type of thing. So Carl will be coming out with that report, so if you're interested in that, I encourage you to talk with him about that. And then we've also partnered with the Convention and Visitors Bureau on a project for Film Wisconsin. If you're familiar with the initiative at the state level that provides tax incentives for the film industry to come and film movies or TV shows or produce video games in Wisconsin, we're working with them to try to bring those industries to this side of the state as well. So we've partnered on a project with them to help fund a helicopter that comes in with some high-definition anti-vibration cameras to film some beautiful footage of this area that then can be used to promote the area to those industries. So those were kind of the three primary projects that we worked with the Convention and Visitors Bureau, but they just thought that they would recognize us for being a good partner. So
the state tourism director was the guest speaker at that lunch yesterday, and she mentioned a number of interesting statistics, one of which sticks in my mind, which is that tourism in La Crosse County is a $211 million business. I hadn't realized there was that much tourist activity in La Crosse County, but $211 million. I think it makes a lot of sense that we get involved in tourism and economic development. It's definitely a part of our lifeblood here. So I think we should give our staff a round of applause for their efforts in that regard.
Well, thank you for your support for allowing us to do those projects and adding significant value to what they do. So thanks.
Thank you, Brian. Continuing along in the agenda, the board, you people forgot that we were supposed to do the Pledge of Allegiance, so we better do that now. You guys did.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
You know, just having Arlene around makes me all jumbled up thinking-wise, so it's all my fault and hers. All right, County Board Supervisors Conference Reports. Anybody at any conferences or things that we need to know about this month? Jill Billings has one.
This is my first one. I was at a conference with Sharon Hampson. It was put on by UW Extension and WCA. And I think they do this on a yearly basis. I would advise anyone who's interested to attend this conference. It's on subjects varying from your role as a county board supervisor to ethics in office, trying to walk that fine line between representing your district and representing your county as a whole and all the nuances of that, the ins and outs of parliamentary procedure. So if you have questions you feel like aren't answered there, they had an expert to talk about that. And then at the end, they did a legislative update on what's happening at the Capitol that affects us and the lobbying efforts that WCA is doing. I've already found it helpful. Stepping Stones, the Children's Advocacy Center, wanted to offer me a free ticket to come to their fundraiser on Friday. Since I was a past board member, they were honoring past board members, and I learned that I could not accept that. So I'm happy to pay my own way and give to Stepping Stones, but just for your information.
Thanks. So going to that cost you some money is basically what it boiled down to.
It's a good cause. I would invite anyone to come Friday at the waterfront.
Thank you, Jill. Maureen Friedland.
Yes, I wanted to refer back to the collaboration conference that we had recently, and I wanted to thank the people who worked on it, including Brian Fukuda and also the Joint Oversight Committee of Sustainability. I wanted to point out that they worked very closely with the city people to get the message right for the city, and funds from the Joint Oversight Committee for Sustainability were used so that the county fee would be lower. So I just wanted to recognize the people who were involved in that. I think it was very successful and very, very helpful. And the business people in the community who I talked to also appreciated that conference very much.
I think it was very successful. Thank you, Maureen. Margaret Wood, what you got?
This was a freebie down at Myrick Park when they were celebrating Bicycle Week. But I noticed that there was a representative from Tri-State Ambulance, and they have two medics who ride bicycles throughout crowds, especially, you know, something like Oktoberfest. One bike carries the defibrillator unit and epinephrine and those kinds of things, and then the other bicycle has more the standard first aid equipment. But I was very impressed with the amount of equipment and what they can do in a crowded situation where vehicles would find it hard to negotiate.
Interesting. Thank you. Anybody else have any? All right. Thanks for those reports. Last thing I have is WCA conference. It's a little early, but I wanted to let you know ahead of time. Is October 12th, 13th, and 14th. If you're interested in going, just talk to the chair, secretary, or Marion, and we'll get you on the list. So that's October 12th, 13th, and 14th. And I think that gets us to county administrator report.
Mr. Chair and members of the board, I only have two proclamations. Proclamation support of Bliss Road fundraiser May 25th, whereas Bliss Road is an important City of La Crosse roadway to access Granddad's Bluff, the Alpine Inn, and surrounding homes in the town of Shelby and town of Madary. And whereas in the spirit of collaboration, the town of Shelby and the Alpine Inn will be holding a fundraiser to help the City of La Crosse repair Bliss Road on Saturday, May 25th, 2008. Tickets are $20 each, with two local bands performing, busing from downtown La Crosse to help avoid traffic and parking problems. And now, therefore, be it resolved, the La Crosse County Board recognizes the importance of Bliss Road to our community and encourages everyone to attend the Rock in the Road fundraiser Saturday, May 25th, 2008, to help the City of La Crosse make needed repairs.
Moved by Tara Johnson, seconded by Bob Kyle. Discussion? All in favor say aye. Opposed, no. One no, John Benninger. Passes.
Okay, hopefully this goes better. recognition of Aging Disability Resource Center, whereas our La Crosse County Aging Disability Resource Center has been operational for 10 years as of April 1st, 2008, whereas the ADRC provides information assistance, options counseling, emergency response services, prevention services, and numerous other services to over 9,000 persons per year who have or are involved with people who have long-term care needs, and whereas of those contacts, 46% are for persons who are elderly, 17% with concerns for those with physical disabilities, 10% for those who have mental health or substance abuse issues, 7% who deal with a developmental disability, and the balance of 20% who fit into more than one of these given long-term care areas. And whereas our local ADRC has been referred to as the crown jewel of ADRCs, especially as it was one of the first 9 pilots in the state of Wisconsin, who is now expanding these throughout the entire state. Now, therefore, be it resolved, La Crosse County Health and Human Services Board and the La Crosse County Board recognize this significant accomplishment and the contributions made by the competent, hardworking men and women in our La Crosse County ADRC, and urge all citizens to join in the recognition of this group of people dedicated to increasing the knowledge, support, and connection to long-term care services.
Moved by Margaret Wood, seconded by Sharon Hampson. Any discussion on this one? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Carried unanimously. That it for you, Mr. O'Malley? Thank you. Cards and correspondence are on the board. Just had additional one added there, so take a look at that during the break if you have a chance. And during the break, Public Works and Infrastructure Committee is going to have a very brief meeting, so we'll remind you of that hopefully again right before we break. Appointments, Tara Johnson.
Mr. Chairman, East-West Conference Room, they'll meet.
Thank you. Right next door. Thank you, Mr. Spiker. Thank you.
Chairman Doyle.
I have, looks like about 20 or so appointments. I'm not going to read them all, but they would be as listed on your agenda. I'd ask for approval.
Is there a second? Seconded by Supervisor Brockmiller. Any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Carries unanimously.
Thank you. Next up is the consent agenda, moved by Mr. Plesha, second by Mr. Sobranek, to approve the consent agenda. Anybody have any changes, questions, or comments regarding that? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Carried unanimously. Vicki Burke.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would like to move to suspend the rules and to move the items under the LEC Construction Committee to this place on the agenda for the benefit of those who are presenting.
The people from Madison have a long drive, so rather than making them sit here and listening to the rest of our agenda, we talked about the board hopefully allowing them a chance to get on the road a little earlier. Is there a second to the motion to suspend the rules? Second by John Menninger. All in favor of suspending the rules to allow that agenda item to be dealt with now, say aye. Opposed, no. Carried unanimously. Vicki Burke.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. First item, number 46-5, presentation on the exterior elevations perspective.
Mr. Chair. Val, you're going to lead us on that one?
Take you through it, yep.
Sounds good.
Boy, the design challenge of adding on to an existing building, I think the way to mark its success is if the addition improves and you can't make out the addition from the rest of the building, what we would call a seamless addition. Now, that was our challenge on this project. One of the things you're looking at this right now, the rendering up on the screen, we're actually coming down 4th Street, and it was done so that you could see the storage garage in the foreground and the new building coming sort of in the background.
Wouldn't this be 3rd Street?
Did I say 3rd? I said 4th. I meant to say 3rd.
This
is 3rd Street, looking from the northwest, and we're looking southeast, actually, is how we're looking at this. And one of the things that we did to help resolve this challenge was looking at the existing vocabulary of materials that are on the building. And we really haven't changed the vocabulary of materials. We've kept the precast and we've kept the brick. One of the things that we've done, though, is we've taken out the tan brick that is on the project, and we've only used the reddish-brown brick, and then the tan color is really a precast material. And you have that on the front or your south orientation of your building. And we're going to go around this on all sides so you get a feeling of what's going on. You really can't make out the building very strongly here, but it's safe to say that your existing building is really here, and then this would be the addition over on this side. And you can begin to see just poking out a little bit of that tan brick that's there now. This piece that's right here is over the loading dock and is literally an element that you're going to see that we've used on all three elevations to try and blend the addition to the new, and it really is a little more successful as we go around here. The storage garage is really a little bit different brick material vocabulary. We did not feel that the cost of going to brick was merited here. We used actually what we call CMU, or concrete masonry units. Some would refer to them as cement block, or some would even call them cinder blocks. And literally what we've done is we've used the colors that are on the existing building and painted those materials to match. The storage garage shows a split face or a rough face block here and a smooth face block here. About the only similarity between this, the other vocabulary piece that we used, the existing building has a lot of strip windows or long linear windows and big curtain wall. We've used the strip window motif on the corner here, and literally we didn't do it quite as a strip. We went to smaller rectangular windows, almost square shape, to get it to read as that. So that was our tie-in to that. What I'm going to do is just... He said to the right. Right arrow. Time for glasses. Oh, this arrow. Okay. Thanks. Nope. Push it again.
Marianne, can you advance it? Hold on a minute. There you go.
Okay.
I'll advance it for you.
Okay, thank you. This is an aerial shot, really looking from the southwest, looking northeast, and it does give you a pretty good shot of the existing building. Here's this half-block sized facility that you're in now, and this gives a good idea of the entire addition here. And it begins to show some of the things. We're going to get up closer in a minute here to look at this. But it shows the material pattern and how we use this tan material that we're showing as precast. You saw it on the north elevation. You're now seeing it on the south and west side of how we sort of inserted it to sort of connect this idea all the way through. We've introduced one other element into the palette that isn't a material, but it's a way of using the massing. Instead of using only the vocabulary of these curtain walls and these strip windows, we really went out into your entire campus and looked for other elements, and the one that we brought in and have reintroduced, and it seems to us to reflect more of the urban context that this building is in, is what we call these punched windows. And we actually inserted these punched windows in a sort of a rhythm around the building to work with these strip windows and to try and get a good-looking elevation and blending in of the new building with the existing building. Jim, you want to do one more? Okay. Here we are now going down 4th Street. No, I'm still going down 3rd Street. Now I'm looking at the building. We're going south. We're past the storage garage. You can see the existing building here, and this is the new part in here. One of the things that we were able to do with the design, which is a little bit unusual in jail construction, and it's one of the things that led your existing building down the path that it did, is the jail cells are up against the outside wall. In this particular project, we have a maintenance corridor around the outside of the building, which disengages the cells from the outside wall and gives us a little more flexibility of how to manipulate the window openings to do some more things. We're still getting an abundance of natural light into this, as you can see in the window pattern, but it lets us get away from having to do this. And literally, even though this looks like windows in your existing building, there are what we call spandrel glass right in front of concrete block. They're not windows in those cells all the way across there. At night when you go by, you can see light, dark, that's that what happens, but it reads as a slot window right now. We've done that a little differently here. You can begin to see the utility island that will be talked about tonight is right in this area right here, and we've used the precast material to screen it. One of the things that came up in committee is, although this is the north side of the building and to some is the back of the building, to people coming into La Crosse from the north, this is the front of the building. This building really has a responsibility on all four elevations to talk, and this is that opportunity to do that, and it gives you a little bit of an idea. As we look down 3rd Street on the west elevation, you can begin to see how we turn that corner and those windows work. This big, gigantic window here is the glass that goes into the two recreation areas that are on the upper levels for the jail portion of the project, and we'll look at that in a minute. We're going to flip all the way to now. We're on 4th Street. We're actually looking southeast towards the northwest, and this should be very familiar because this is the side of the building that you're used to seeing right now. And what we've done is we've taken the porch, the canopy, and extended it out a bit. We've taken the precast off of here, and we've moved it, not that same precast, but a similar material, and we've moved it to get this linking piece that links those two parts. The lobby is still right here in the front, and it literally slopes down and goes to this other lower level of the building. This is where right now you come in vehicularly. You will not be able to do that in the future. But you can begin to see how this massing works and how this some of these decisions start to work. I don't know if that's the last one or is there one more? Okay. Okay. Well, that does give you a little... Oh, there is one. Okay. There it is now looking from the southwest. We're actually almost looking out the back window of a car going south on 3rd Street. But it does give you an idea. Here's the existing building right here. This is all new in here. One of the other responsibilities that this elevation has is it has a main front door and a secondary front door. The main front door, where we want people to go without a sign that says enter here, is over here where you're used to entering right now because that's where the security detail is and we're able to go through and have things checked. There is another side to this building that has a subordinate front entrance that's for after-hour use, and it's right here, and it doesn't want to scream out, come here, because it's not really promoted during the day, but it actually we want to make sure that it's understood. So that's what's going on with this elevation. Primary entrance up here, the glass, and we're coming down a ramp to this lower level, and this is that secondary entrance. You can also see as we go back up, we don't have a great shot just looking at the west elevation, but you can see where we've taken this element that we used on the south and on the north. We've used it on the west right over the garage entrance for the, what's that called?
Booking
Sallyport, the Sallyport entrance to the project. And you can just get a pretty good idea of what's going on. This building really maxes out that whole block site. There's some trees shown, but there's very little green area around the building. We've actually maxed out what's available on that area. If there's questions, we can go back and go over something.
Mr. Bina.
No. Eric, help me here is how that is set up as far as it. You're referring to after hours, right?
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
Yeah, it would be, it's after hours, so it's, you know, if security goes to 7 o'clock, they enter the front door, say, yeah, along 4th Street. That would be open then for in the evenings or potentially a buzzer type of a call system back to central control because central control is right inside that door down there viewing towards that entrance. So it is a monitored entrance and has the ability to be very secure.
I didn't want somebody robbing the drill.
No.
Any other questions? Mr. Ebert.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Looking at the garage, I see all there's 8 windows on that corner, and if that's around, when we were talking about efficiency, we were talking about most of our heat loss is through windows, and I wonder if we can decrease that, and I assume probably windows are more expensive than block. That almost just seems so windowy that I wonder if that's, again, to get a better energy efficiency and probably a little cheaper if that's a possibility.
This is actually probably the most advantageous angle to look at it from the window effect because we literally have those windows, that whole rest of that side, 160 feet, 120 feet, doesn't have any other windows on it. So we've clustered them on that corner. But certainly taking windows out would it would be less expensive. This is how it was bid, and this is the image that we received the bids on right now.
Did we see this? I don't remember seeing it at committee. Oh, my apologies.
Actually, you saw it more in elevation. We didn't show it in 3 dimensions. But the elevations actually show it in some respects more honestly because you get to see the whole elevation in perspective of opening to mass, you know, so you get a little better understanding of it.
Mr. Samranek.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. With everybody caught up in the green thing, wouldn't these windows contain argon gas or be energy efficient?
Yes, sir, they do.
Good.
Any other questions? Okay.
Thank you.
That it for that one? How about presentation on the site plan review?
Don't think we have anything on that.
Okay.
No one's prepared for that tonight. It was mainly just to be able to highlight when we get to the issue of the storage building and the award of the bid on that, that you see a location. Both the aerial view and this shows you where that storage building and utility facility is going to be, so you get a better sense. Those that have been around for a lot longer have seen some of this. Those that are new to the board haven't seen the three dimensions.
Then construction parking changes. Jim, are you doing that one?
I'm doing that one.
All right.
As long as I have this one up on the screen, I don't have an aerial view of this right now tonight, but basically from the backside of D's all the way over to the law enforcement center and to 3rd Street is going to be construction zone for about 24 to 30 months. There's about 150 spaces in there, and I think you've heard me talk about that before. I took a proposal to Public Works last Monday. They approved the proposal, but we thought we'd bring it to you and let you know what's going on in case you get questions about it. In essence, we're going to remove 59 meters and convert it to permit-only parking. And keep in mind, all of this parking down in here, the 150 spaces, is all permit parking. There isn't any meters down there.
Jim, did the one slide that from above show the whole parking lot area?
I can go back and that one there?
Yeah.
So basically from the backside of D's here to the building all the way to the west. Once they build the building here, they'll be working on the utility island, and the rest of this space here will be construction staging for the main building. So that's what we've got to vacate for.
So everything to the north of the building?
Everything from this line here to the north and west, the front half here will be open.
Mr. Sobranek.
Jim, with this parking lot here, is that reserved parking? Is that for access for people using the center, or is it reserved parking?
It's reserved by permit only, basically employees.
Thank you. Yep.
Rain Friedland.
Yes, thank you. Two questions at one time. Where will the metered parking be? And doesn't it make more sense for employees to have to walk a little bit further so that they do the walking, maybe consider alternate transportation? And the visitors, the clients, the disabled people, the people who need the services of human services and so forth, they can use those meters?
I do hit on that later on in what I'm talking about, so just hold tight. 59 meters, and that's meters in all three parking lots. On State Street, on the big lot over here, what we call the Wards lot across from Wetstein's, there's meters all the way along State Street. Those meters get used mostly by downtown employees, merchants, and alike. Very few of our customers park down here. And very, very seldom does that lot fill up for meters. So that's my proposal for that lot.
But those meters go?
Those meters go and get turned in. All of the meters that I'm saying go get turned into permit parking. There's meters in Lot D, which is the Health and Human Services lot that you spoke of. Very seldom does that get filled up. And again, this is it's going to be a fluid plan. If we see we're running short on public parking, absolutely, I'll try to change that, because I agree with your thought is we're here for the public, so we need to accommodate them. And then the other meters that we're going to eliminate are, there's two rows of meters in Lot A to the north of LEC. We're going to eliminate one of those rows and turn that into sheriff's parking only, because keep in mind they have a parking lot down here for their squads and staff that come and go during the day. So that's the part for the meters. There's 7 city stalls that we allow the city to park right here in front of D's. We have an agreement with them that will allow them to park 7 city cars there, and they plow in between this building and City Hall. So I've asked the Public Works Director over there to try to find spots on their property, at least for the next 2 years, to accommodate those vehicles. And again, we're all going to share in this pain. It isn't
It shouldn't just be about the employee or the customer. Downtown merchants are gonna share in the pain as well. So eliminate 30 permit spaces for downtown businesses and employees that currently lease from us. We have a good revenue stream from downtown merchants and employees that don't have anywhere else to park. They actually lease space from us, so we would eliminate those. And those I found room for down in another parking lot down on 2nd Street that they can lease. So it's not like they're going to be pushed out and nowhere to go. There is other alternatives for them. By doing what I just described, we'll gain about 101 spots back of that 150. That's the bad news. The good news is I've been working with WTC, and my counterpart over there has committed 50 spots for permit-only spaces over in their big lot across from 7th Street. Along with this, encourage public or alternate transportation for employees. So that's where I was getting back to your comment there. So that's kind of parking in a nutshell. When this is done, we'll still be down about 50 spaces. But keep in mind, we're not leasing to those 30 anymore. So at that time, we'll have to reevaluate, put meters back in, maybe not as many.
Jim, one of the questions that has come up a few times at the meetings, I know, is on jury selection day. Mm-hmm. Place gets pretty packed over there. Yep. How are we going to handle that?
Well, that's why we need to do what we're doing here. This will come pretty close to satisfying all of those needs. Because if you look over there right now, with the permit people from downtown starting to leave, that lot is pretty empty. I mean, we had a lot of cars down there that we were leasing out. So.
Okay. Other questions for Jim? Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks, Jim. All right. Bid award recommendation. Who's taking the lead on that?
Mr. Chairman, item 49.5, bid award recommendation. This is not the one on the housing in the garage. This was information that we received at the LEC meeting about some problems with the bids for the housing renovation and the bids related to the garage and utility island. So Mr. O'Malley is going to give us that information.
Sure. The board should recall that we went to bid on two early portions of the Law Enforcement Center project. One is a remodeling of housing pods in the existing jail, and then the storage building and utility island. Don Carlson, our construction manager, is here and can explain in more detail, but the housing renovation bid came in incomplete. There were major sections of it that we received no subcontractor bids on. We just reported this to the Law Enforcement Center, so we do not have a bid award to recommend to you on the housing renovation. That's disappointing because we had hoped to have that done sooner rather than later this year. What we'll do is wrap that into the larger project and bid that out at the same time. We can talk about some of the reasons that happened, but we didn't get enough bids on significant portions called the building works, the actual major construction of the project. We do have a bid recommendation and a resolution on your desk for acceptance of bids on the Law Enforcement Center Garage and Utility Island construction. But let me just stop there and talk a little bit more about the housing renovation. We had hoped to have that up and completed by the end of the year. We'll have to relook at the staging and how it fits into the overall construction project. Don might be able to, Don, if you come up and just talk about some of the pros and cons and why we maybe didn't get as many responsive bids on the housing renovation. Then we'll go on to the recommendation that we have.
Thank you, Steve. We did, as Steve mentioned, we got bids for both projects on Tuesday. We did a lot of soliciting for bids for both, and we got decent coverage on the garage and the utility building. As far as the housing remodel, we received a number of bids for the detention work. The piece that was really missing is the building works, which is primarily the general contractors. We had hoped some of the local generals would take an interest in this. Mike had two walkthroughs on the project, and I think, Mike, you had probably everyone in town at the walkthrough, and when it came down to it, they didn't bid on the building portion works. Right now in the marketplace, there's a lot of bids going on, and it's not the easiest project in the world. We had it drawn where they would stage, punch a hole in the outside, set up some scaffolding there. You know, maybe some of that scared them off, but I think the bottom line is there were better projects available to bid, and they had so much time to bid, and they picked the WWTCs and the university and the Holman schools. So we kind of missed out on that portion. Our plan, we talked with Doris a little bit after the LEC meeting. If we lump it with the larger addition, now it's going to be a small piece of a bigger pie, and hopefully it will be far more attractive. The other advantage we'll have is we'll have a concrete deck at the right level for them to stage from. So I think the instructions we got from Doris is see how fast we can get that done once we get the main addition going. If there's any questions.
I'm going to then put item 53.5 on the floor. This is the acceptance of bids for the Law Enforcement Center, Utility Island, and Garage Construction. Well, this is kind of out of order there, but...
You have it sitting on your desk as a separate thing?
This was a resolution that was passed at the LEC committee this afternoon on a 9-1 vote, one absent. To the honorable members of the La Crosse County Board of Supervisors regarding acceptance of bids for the Law Enforcement Center, Utility Island, and Garage Construction. Whereas the Law Enforcement Construction Committee has pursued bids for construction of the Law Enforcement Center, Utility Island, and Garage. And whereas La Crosse County advertised for bids for said construction, where the bidders were requested to provide prices on 15 different contracts. And whereas bids were publicly opened on May 13, 2008, and whereas the bids of the lowest responsible bidders for each contract are as follows. Whereas the total estimated construction costs include the low bids listed above plus construction manager, architectural, engineering, and contingency costs for a total project not to exceed $1,274,844. And whereas the project will be funded from bond proceeds. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the La Crosse County Board of Supervisors hereby awards the contracts for construction of the Law Enforcement Center, Utility Island, and Garage to the firms listed above for a total project cost not to exceed $1,274,844 in accordance with the bids opened on May 13, 2008 and the contract specifications provided by La Crosse County. Be it further resolved that the County Board Chair and County Clerk are hereby authorized to execute any agreement to accomplish said work after approval by Corporation Counsel. Fiscal note, the AN construction managers are working to obtain project deducts that could reduce the project cost by up to $100,000. I move for its approval.
Moved by Vicki Burke, seconded by John Menninger. Discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
One no, Mr. Erickson. That passes. All righty, that gets us to the next item, Ms. Burke.
Yes. The next items you have are item 50-5, 51-5, and 52-5. At the committee meeting, and I'm asking your advice on handling this, at the committee, the Law Enforcement Construction Committee recommended tabling number 50-5, item 51-5, and recommended item 52-5 on a 7-3 vote. Mr. Chairman, do you want me to place item 55 on the floor for tabling, or?
Why don't we do it all as one motion where it is to reject the other two and to approve 52-5?
52-5.
Okay. And
all right.
Along with those resolutions, the amendments that were on the floor.
That sound okay, Bill?
Right. So get rid of this, the motion will get rid of everything that was up the other day when at policy planning, including the amendments that were on the floor. Replace all of those with one resolution, which is 52-5. That's your motion?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. So we'll
second
do that before I would read the 52-5,
correct? Now you can read 52-5.
All right. Item 52.5 to the honorable members of the La Crosse County Board of Supervisors regarding sustainable design strategies for Law Enforcement Center addition. Whereas the resolution approving the addition to the LEC did not include pursuit of leadership in energy and environmental design certification, and whereas La Crosse County Echo County designation endorses the principles of sustainable development and supports the application of these principles whenever possible, and whereas LEED building certification would provide independent recognition of building operation efficiency and recognition of the project in accordance with the nationally recognized standard of environmentally sustainable building construction. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the architect is authorized to incorporate the following specific sustainable design strategies into the construction documents that will be used by the construction manager to obtain construction bids on the LEC addition. The sustainable design strategies have been developed based upon the identified leadership in energy and environmental design categories and credit numbers. The project's construction documents shall be prepared with the following sustainable design strategies incorporated into the base building construction bid estimated cost as follows. Be it further resolved that if the project bids and all costs exceed $29.5 million approved for the LEC addition, the additional alternates may be deleted by a majority vote to stay within project budget or funded from the general fund by a two-thirds vote of the county board. Footnote, upon receipt of all bids on the project, a resolution will be prepared for consideration by the county board to pursue LEED certification of the project. The following represents items and estimated costs for submittal of documentation to the U.S. Green Building Council. Note, in order to incorporate LEED standards into the project specifications for seeking bids, the architect will be devoting approximately $26,000 of architectural design and construction document services for research and development of design strategies and tracking of LEED points targeted. I move for its approval and ask for a chance to comment on it.
That was seconded by John Manninger. Go ahead, Ms. Burke.
All right. We had considerable discussion on the resolution at the LEC meeting this afternoon. The resolution is divided with the first thing that you have, those items on under the first, now therefore be it resolved. Those are items that the architect felt and the construction manager needed to be included in the design, just the base building construction bid, and they are the energy efficient items that we have looked at prior to this time. The second part, the sustainable design strategies and the finish of the lease space for state probation and parole, those will be bid separately with the project. The last part is just an inclusion of what would be needed for LEED certification. That is not, to my understanding, part of that bid procedure. And that was our understanding of the resolution.
Further discussion, Mr. Bina?
I was trying to piece together what we talked about last meeting, 2.5 and 3.5, and what is in this proposal and what what isn't in the proposal. Is all of 2.5 in the proposal, or is all of 3.5 in the proposal, as we had it explained to us last at the planning meeting?
Steve, why don't you answer that?
This resolution, the new resolution that's before you, reflects everything that's in the LEED standards proposal. And allows, right. It allows you to get all of the bid items for all of those and make the LEED decision when you actually have bid numbers. So it includes everything that was in the LEED resolution. It's just in a different order.
Okay, I think the figure, without looking it up, was $1,000,001 or something like that to put into the 3.5 as of last month. But now you're saying you're not going to be bidding the LEED standards. You're going to be leaving it for some future time. No, it's going to be all included in this document now.
As alternates, though. So we could pick and choose.
So you can at some later date eliminate some or all of it?
When the bids come in, the items that are top of that, the back page, those, if you think are too expensive, you can delete those.
Start deleting.
Yes.
So that'll give you some options at a later date then.
When we actually have real numbers in firm bid.
Okay.
Okay. Then it's your
question. Because I'm kind of afraid with the contractors the way they are, I don't think we're going to have contractors coming in very low. That's my opinion.
Other questions or comments? Don Meyer.
Everybody else probably knows this, but I don't. Approximate costs, where do they come from on both of these sheets?
Who wants to answer that, Don?
I mean, I don't mean each one, but
no.
Just in general.
Basically, that's just an estimated cost per item. You know, a lot of this stuff isn't designed, so some of it's somewhat of a swag. Some of it we were able to get numbers on. That's just our best guess at what each point is going to cost.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Other questions? Leon Paff.
Thank you. You won't necessarily be LEED certified then. You will be taking a step at a time in order to be LEED certified, but if you miss one step, then you won't be LEED certified, right? So that's going to be a little tough to determine as you go. I don't know if we're much further ahead than we were last week because I thought we were going to make a decision on being yes or no, not just a little bit of one thing.
John Menninger, you want to respond to that?
Yeah, well, I think this is a large step forward because we're going to know exactly what the numbers are and we're going to know exactly where we all are. As I said in the committee meeting this afternoon, it leaves everybody, those against any of these initiatives and those for the initiatives, free to fight another day, but we'll have solid information to go by. We haven't changed the $29.5 million. We haven't talked about majority votes and two-thirds votes. What we said is we want these bid as alternates. And then when we see what the bids are, then we can go back in and decide whether we're under the cap or we're over the cap, and then we'll make our decisions accordingly. So we haven't crossed that bridge yet, and this doesn't cross it.
That answer your question, Leon?
In a way, but are we going to be dealing with each individual situation then, or is the committee going to be dealing with that, or when are we going to make that decision once we get to started building? Or when we're partway into it, you know, I don't know if these decisions.
I'm going to call on Tom Roque, who is the initiator of this approach, to respond to that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Let me describe what we're looking at from using slightly different words and not changing any of the content. All of those line items that you see with dollars zero or numbers after it, on the first page, this resolution proposes that we direct the architect and construction manager to include these items fully and completely in the drawings that they are preparing to go out to bid. And they will be in the full basic package of this document if we approve this resolution as it stands. And they would add the $309,000, or they would designate approximately the $309,000. One of the reasons is to find out what those things are really going to cost, and they will be aggregated in the basic plan. On page 2, those sustainable design strategies listed at the top, there are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 of them, will be bid as an alternate bid, but they will be each separately identified in those alternate bids. And when we see what each of those cost us or are proposed to cost us, we can work through those, Mr. Paff, one at a time and decide yes or no on each one. They are independent of each other, and we can look at each of those or select all of them if we wish. Item 2, the finish of the lease space for probation and parole, we spoke about before as to whether that money can be saved. We, of course, don't even yet have a contract relationship with those folks where we have agreed, nor have they agreed, as to exactly what space and what rental price and things like that. So there's a whole lot of work to be done on that before that would come close to fruition. If we were to choose all of those items in the basic package on the front page, all of those items in the sustainable design strategies in alternate bid number 1, and if we still felt either that we had the elbow room in the 29.5, or if we felt that we wanted, after all, to add more money from some other source. And as Supervisor Menger has already said, that discussion isn't happening tonight. That discussion is deferred until we see these real numbers. But if we felt that we wanted to go all the way to full LEED certification, that's what those items under the footnote below explained to us that we would have to add in some fashion to this project to get all the way to full LEED certification. Thank you.
Mr. Banff, you're still on the floor.
So then we would add those three subtotals together to come up with that. You're adding a 4.55, 355,000 in, what was the other one? 499, we'll still be over 1 million then.
Joe Veenstra, I think, has the answer to that one.
But we're approving it. If we do approve this, then what you're saying is we could be approving up to $1.1 million worth of leeway? Yes or no?
Joe?
Thank you. I believe the reason there's a little difference if you add up the totals, including the probation and parole space, is because a portion of that $499,000 was included in the 29.5 plan originally. Basically, it's the same 1.1 approximately.
Don, you agree with that? You were getting up to talk?
Actually, probation and parole would be a possible deduct if they would not come. So you wouldn't be adding that $499. You'd have the possibility of deducting it.
Well, what you're asking for then tonight is us to give the committee approval for up to spending 1.1.
No, we're not giving the committee authority to spend anything other than the cost of running the ads for the bids.
They're going to bring each one back to the board.
This does not authorize spending. This authorizes them to send this out for bids, and then when the bids come back, you can pick and choose. In fact, if the bids came back too high, you could say, we don't like any of the bid, and start totally over. It's not authorized spending of a dime other than for advertising for bids. That answer your question then, Leon? Okay. Ralph Geary.
Thank you. Does this cost us any more money in architectural fees? In addition, if we didn't do it, if we just went forward with as planned, we added another $26,000 on if we use it or not, then, right?
It's an additional $26,000, which is identified there, but the expectation is we have to stay within the 29.5 for the entire project.
Okay, and I think this was brought up the last meeting. I went back to some of my minutes. I always thought probation and parole was to be included in that building, and until last month I didn't know that that was being considered as a alternate or a deduct or whatever. I wasn't on the committee. I only went to about one meeting, but checking the minutes, I couldn't find where we ever were talking about eliminating it till last month.
Well, let me have Steve respond to that.
The original process and highest priority is a jail addition and justice sanctions offices. During that discussion, we talked about adding probation and parole and set in the resolution 8,000 square feet. Remember, in that resolution, we set the square footage amounts for each area. As we've begun to do detailed design, their expectations and wants have grown to 12,000 square feet, which means it's a 50% increase, which will require at some point a vote by this board to exceed the limits set. So in our need to look at what's optional, and until we have a contract with them, we need to be able to actually identify the cost of doing that. It started to eat up part of our contingency, and so this resolution will allow us to get the detail numbers so that we can tie it directly to the lease if you keep them in the building, perhaps even funding the finish from the lease. But until we actually have a contract and finalize how much space they actually need today and how much of it is just for future growth, we won't know that. We will bring that back to you after that design. So, no, we did not have probation and parole listed as an alternate originally. We needed to be able to identify that to tie it back into the lease discussion and how much space they clearly need, because you will have to, as a board, make that decision when we come back with that. The original estimate by probation and parole was for 8,000 square feet. As they've worked on it, and the state office has actually requested that they get more space than they originally thought.
Okay. When are we supposed to – are we going to know the answer to that lease question when these bids come in?
That will be the goal, is to bring you that information so you'll have all information before you and how to make that decision.
Jim Burns.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just trying to understand this resolution because it's in a different format than the resolutions we had last week. And I guess I'd like to get some further explanation on the first page of the new resolution that we're debating. I guess I want to know what is on this list that was in the lead-like resolution. And what is not on the list? Or is there anything on the list that isn't in the lead-like resolution? I guess that's maybe the best question.
Pick whichever one you want to answer, Eric, but leaving it in your hands.
Okay. You want to do it for the whole thing? Well,
go ahead.
The resolution 52-5, all of the elements in that resolution are included in the lead resolution, not the lead-like resolution.
Okay. I want to. Okay, so all these are in the lead resolution. So basically, okay, that's on the first page.
On the if in totality, the 52-5, the resolution on the table, that includes everything that is in the lead resolution. But on the first page here,
but it doesn't, because it doesn't include anything about lead certification.
It does on the second page of 52-5.
Okay, gotcha. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I'm sorry. The whole thing, both pages taken together,
okay,
are in a different format, but they're identical in information as they are on the lead resolution.
Okay, so
the lead-like resolution, there's some differences. I mean, the same information.
Okay.
And I haven't done the comparison of the first page in comparing to the lead-like. But we could go down through it.
I guess I'm still a little confused, and I serve on the LAC committee, and I wasn't at the meeting today because I had a commitment. But I'm still a little confused over this resolution, and I guess the other thing I'm concerned about, I know Mr. O'Malley addressed it, is the probation and parole, and I guess it seems like we're operating that as more of an option now, and I guess I'm concerned that really, in my opinion, shouldn't be an option.
Steve, why don't you respond to that?
Well, let me start with probation and parole, then I'll go back to the other items. What the goal here is to make sure that what we end up agreeing to with probation and parole, whether they move in day one or 12 months later or whatever the issue is, that their costs are directly tied to and identifiable for the lease. They haven't agreed to a lease yet. They haven't agreed to a dollar amount. It's just been a placeholder within the resolution. You still will have to vote on, if you're going to lease them more space than the $8,000, you will also have to vote on a lease arrangement of what that dollar amount is and how you – remember, we didn't count on the lease payment in this whole situation because we didn't know if we had a lease. We set a square footage amount. Since design has come back, it's come to be a larger amount. So we're going to refine that design, and the bid may come in less than that $499. If we can get them to agree to something closer to the $8,000 for the first several years, it will give us more flexibility. That alternate of state probation and parole doesn't have to be the first item pulled out. It could be the last item. You could end up deciding not to do lead and leave that in there. Or you could end up funding the probation and parole from the lease payment. Right now, you don't have a means for funding that. It's already included in the 29.5. This will give you more information to be able to make that decision.
That was part of his question, and address the other part.
Yeah, the lead-like, again, you know the items that were pulled out of lead-like from the lead resolution, mm-hmm. which was a lower commissioning and not doing the certification, the $187,000. So those are still the same two differences. The same differences between the lead resolution originally and lead-like are still there. They're just reorganized in the last resolution. So it's the exact same items. Commissioning, instead of being $90,000, is $280,000. It's just shown up in two different places. You end up doing the certification and compliance, which is $187,000, in either the lead resolution or the current resolution that's before you. You didn't do those in the lead-like resolution. All this does is give you more information on actual bid numbers on everything before you make final decisions. But this gives you an estimate based on the best information we have right now.
Jim, that answer?
Yeah.
Okay. John Menninger?
Yeah, just to maybe doesn't need any more clarification, but Jim, this is pretty much what you supported last month. It's just in a different format, and I know it's a little confusing, but if you look at page one and then that first section, and page two, you get back to that $630,000, but it's broken up. Part of it's going to be in the base bid. Some of it's going to be optional, but they had to put it in the base bid because of the way the thing is. Otherwise, they wouldn't get anybody to bid on it. It'd be too complicated. And I think all of us want probation and parole in there because it's a revenue stream. But if we don't have an agreement or the state doesn't sign an agreement, then we don't have them in there anyway. So, I mean, you can't force them into this building. And so I think we're all hoping that that happens as a revenue stream. But without an agreement, we can't count the money and we can't put them in there.
Joe Veenstra.
Thank you. One thing I guess I would point out is I would hope that Mr. O'Malley or whoever is negotiating the lease could negotiate in the shadow of an option rather than an already constructed office.
Other questions, comments? People ready to vote? Let's try voice vote first. Oh, Vicki Burke.
I guess I'm still a little concerned because I guess I really like the lead-like resolution, and I was ready to support that tonight. And I understand the point of getting more information and getting actual bids, and I understand that. I guess I'm still, I guess the way Mr. Menninger explained it makes sense. I guess my question is why couldn't we just pass the lead-like resolution and then continue to look into the lead certification? Why?
I think the answer to that is that this gives you those numbers, and that'd be the only way to get those numbers. If you just do an original bid and then you say, well, let's see what it might cost to put those other things in, it's a disconnected process. I don't think they'd recommend we do it that route. Mr. Spiker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Would going full lead certification, which some of the board wants, would that in any way jeopardize probation and parole?
I don't know if it would jeopardize, but it could end up being an either-or decision.
That'd be on the table, in other words.
Sure. And you could also be in a position that probation and parole doesn't agree to a lease, and right. We need to pull that out anyway.
Second thing is footnotes replace fiscal notes now on this resolution? am I right in saying the cost of this resolution will actually be $26,000? Is that true? Because we're going to pay extra $26,000 for the architect design contract documents. So is that really the cost of this resolution is $26,000?
I think that's accurate.
Okay. Thank you.
Tom Roque.
I think I'd just like to ask for clarification on that latter point. I'm not sure that $26,000 is additive. I believe it's specified or designated out of, the way you already said, Mr. O'Malley, out of the $29,500, it's going to be there. This is not authorization in any way, asking this board to consider going above the $29,500 at this point. Okay.
Right. So it doesn't go above it, but it's asking for the designer to do more than what is in his team's contract. So it's taking up a little bit of the contingency that stays within 29.5. So very specifically, it's spending more than what we're contracted with the architect for right now because it's going beyond the scope of the work in his current contract.
Bobby Erickson.
Yeah, I just want to say before we vote that, as Mr. O'Malley said before, the county board set its priority to expand the jail and justice sanctions. And me, as an elected public servant, I think that it's our responsibility to spend the taxpayers' dollars with a frugality and thrift that I would do if it were my own money. That being said, obviously being a poor college student like myself, I can relate to having to stay within a budget. and cutting spending so that I can use it in for more important needs. So that being said, I just think it's important for me to vote no on the resolution so we can just minimize the cost of the project for the public and focus on the original task that we set out to do.
Dan Bina.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm still a little puzzled. You know, watching the paper and watching the budget debate on the state level and seeing that the state has not got a lot of money, and we're putting, you know, it's nice to have them in there, but if we don't get any money back out, and if we're going to take 12,000 feet and they don't go in there, what's going to happen to that 12,000 feet, and how is it going to be utilized if they don't go in there and if they find some other place to hang their hat because they either don't have money or they can't get money appropriated from the state level?
The intention, even before we brought up the concept of probation and parole, is that that would be unfinished space, which is the same situation that if they don't execute a lease, there have been other counties that have started to negotiate a lease with the state and couldn't come to an agreement. This space will still be there. It's an unfinished shell. In addition to that, there is unfinished space also on that floor for expansion of justice sanctions in the future, as well as other office needs. The majority of that floor is unfinished under the current plan.
Ralph Geary.
There seems to be some debate about this $26,000, if it's a fiscal note or not. If the bids would happen to exceed $29,500, then, and the county board decided to stay at $29,500, we have to cut out another $26,000 that if we didn't do this originally, we wouldn't have to cut out. Is that how that works?
The only way we go above $29,500 is on a two-thirds vote.
But by passing this, the architect and the construction manager combined get an additional $26,000 over what we originally contracted for them to do?
Which would have to come from somewhere else within the $29,500.
Correct. That's my point. If we go above it and had to make a cut, then we actually—they're getting paid. If we, matter what, we've spent $26,000 on them. They are going to get paid that money.
Correct.
So this has a fiscal note of $26,000. That is
correct.
That is correct. Okay.
Yes. Other questions, comments? All right. Let's vote on the computer. If you are in favor of resolution number 53-5. Vote yes. If you are opposed, vote no. 52-5? Oh, sorry, looking at the wrong one. 52-5. Sorry. If you're in favor of 52-5, vote yes. If you're opposed, vote no on the computer. And this also tables those other two. Thank you, Ms. Burke. Vicki Burke and Bob Kyle, we're still waiting for your votes. Yes, 9 no's. That resolution passes. And is that it for you, Ms. Burke?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Looks like it is. Okay. Thank you. At this point, then, let's go back to Planning, Resources, and Development. That'd be Tom Rauch.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have item 26-5, a conditional use permit, number 762, filed by Leslie and Nancy Mansky, to strip, evacuate, stockpile, and sell topsoil from their farm in the town of Shelby. By unanimous vote, the committee recommended approval of this permit, subject to the seven conditions listed, and I move the committee report.
Mr. Rauch moves the committee report, which is to approve, subject to certain conditions. Is there a second? Second by Bob Kyle. Any discussion or questions? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. One no, Sharon Hampson. That carries.
I have item 27-5, the non-metallic mining reclamation permit number 2008-25, filed by Leslie and Nancy Mansky, subject to the conditional use permit that we just approved in the town of Shelby. By unanimous vote, the committee recommended approval of this mining permit, subject to seven conditions for the reclamation plan. I move the committee report.
Mr. Rock moves the committee report, which is to approve subject to seven conditions. Is there a second? Second by Dennis Montai. Any discussion or questions on this one? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Carried unanimously.
I have item 28-5, petition number 1778, filed by HF Eagle Enterprises, LLC, to rezone from an exclusive ag district to ag district A in the town of Farmington. And the committee recommends approval of rezoning to conditional agricultural district A, subject to recording of deed restrictions on the 30.42 acres so that they cannot be further subdivided, and to include a maintenance agreement required for the existing easement. I move the committee report.
Mr. Rock moves the committee report, seconded by Marilyn Pedretti. Is there discussion, questions on that one? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Carried unanimously.
Item 29-5, a conditional use permit, number 772, filed by William and Doreen Heider, to operate an excavation business to store and maintain equipment in the town of Hamilton. The committee recommended unanimously approval of this permit, subject to the 14 conditions that are attached to the permit request. I move the committee report.
Mr. Rauch moves the committee report, which is to approve subject to conditions, seconded by Dennis Montai. Discussion on this one? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Carried unanimously.
Item 30-5, conditional use permit number 774, filed by Todd Wright on behalf of Donald and Karen Heidel, revocable trust, to amend existing conditional use permit number 700, condition number 5, to amend the final removal date of the stockpile from December 31, 2007, to add 1 year to make it December 31, 2008. This in the town of Farmington. The committee recommends approval of the permit with that change.
Mr. Rock moves the committee report, which is to approve, seconded by Bob Kyle. Discussion? Questions? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Carry Janet.
And can I?
Mr. Pedretti is abstaining.
Thank
that
you.
Passes.
Thank you. And item 31-5, petition number 1779, filed by Mary Scheel on behalf of the Four Loons LLC to rezone from Commercial District B with conditional zoning to Commercial District B with conditional zoning amended in the town of Madary. And the committee recommended approval of this rezoning as requested, subject to the three deed restrictions listed in the request. And I move the committee report.
Mr. Rock moves the committee report, which is to approve subject to deed restrictions. Is there a second? Second by Mr. Bina. Discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Carried unanimously.
Item 32-5, the non-metallic mining reclamation permit, number 2008-26, filed by Charlie Handy, La Crosse County Planner, acting on behalf of La Crosse County, La Crosse County Facilities Department, in cooperation with the La Crosse County Economic Development Fund, on land zoned industrial district in the village of West Salem. The committee recommended approval to this mining permit, subject to the three listed conditions. I move the committee report.
Mr. Rock moves the committee report, which is to approve, subject to the listed conditions. There are seconds. Second by Margaret Wood. Any discussion on this item? Mr. Ebert.
Yeah, I assume are we selling that sand or something to somewhere, or what are we doing this for?
Jim Spiropoulos will answer that. Jim, did you hear the question?
Yeah. This is something we've been doing over the last probably 3 or 4 years. Typically what happens is a contractor comes to us looking for sand. We allow them to go in and excavate a certain amount out. We sell it to them, and then they have to close it back up. What this does is opens it up a larger area, so we don't have to keep closing it every time. But, yes, we do sell it.
Okay, and then is that some of those proceeds shared with the Lake District, who also paid to do the dredging?
The proceeds go into the general fund of the county.
Thank you.
Further discussion? All in favor say aye. Opposed, no. One no, two no's, Mr. Ebert and Mr. Erickson. That resolution passes, or motion passes. That it for you, Mr. Roque? Okay. We shuffled things around a little bit. I'd like to do our recess at this point so we can get our, Public Works' meeting, get their committee meeting in, and then we'll come back, let's say, about 10 minutes. So we'll take a recess right now till about 7:34. Supervisors, please take your seats. All right, we're back in session, and we are at Executive Committee. Mr. Rauch.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have item 33-5, a resolution to the honorable members of the La Crosse County Board of Supervisors regarding elected official salaries for the next term. Now, therefore, it be resolved that the following elected officials shall be paid at the annual rates set forth on the following schedule for the 2009 to 2012 term, commencing January 5th, 2009, and for the subsequent years of the term shall be effective January 1 for 2010, 2011, and 2012. The fiscal note is the cost of salary and elected roll-ups at 11.5% for this group in 2009 will be approximately $7,107. I move for its approval.
Moved by Mr. Rauch. Is there a second? Anybody? Second by Bill Brockmiller. Discussion. Chuck Spiker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have an amendment to offer. Would be the county treasurer would be 2009 would be $60,844, 2010 $62,670, 2011 $64,550, 2012 $66,486. Also, register of deeds would be 2009 $60,844, 2010 $62,670, 2011 $64,550, 2012 $66,486. I move for approval of that amendment, Mr.
Mr. Spiker moves that as
and I'd like to speak to it.
Certainly. Seconded by Jim Burns.
Mr. Chairman, what this would do would bring all three of our elected people on county clerk, county treasurer, register of deeds on the same par. In executive committee, the county clerk was raised 5%, 3%, 3%, 3%, and I feel out of fairness for the treasurer and for the register of deeds, it should be the same thing, 5%, 3%, 3%, 3%. And the elected officials, that if you look at the comparisons in that of different counties in that, we always say we're a better county than everybody else in that. If you look at the pay for our elected officials, and that is not just these three, the other two, the sheriff and the clerk of court, it's I think we're paying at a level sometimes to the third staff level in departments. But in past years, we've always tried to keep the county treasurer, register of deeds, and the county clerk together. Now, you receive letters from all of them. They all make good points. What disturbed me was in committee, we talked about one position, and I don't deny what was said about that position. But also, the register of deeds and the county treasurer had added duties too. They're people that we don't see half the time, we don't know half the time, and the county clerk, this is not picking on Marion or anybody, it's any county clerk deals with the county board every day. So you see them every day. So if we really would have done this right, and I would be just as much at fault as anybody else, we would have did a survey of to do what and find out what each one of them does and then base it on that. But that wasn't happened. And I don't blame the supervisor that offered this amendment originally, but I was caught off guard, quite honestly, in that. And the register of deeds and the county treasurer are here. Marion's here, so I don't know if the chair, how he'd like to handle this. If you want them to speak, they are department heads. They don't need any special approval from the county board, as I know the chair is aware of that. And so it's up to you. But I just think this amendment is a fairness amendment, And the percentages in that will be different, and probably tomorrow leadoff story in the Tribune will be whatever percentages is. This is a small group of people. It's a deserving group of people. And to be a conservative like I am, maybe, there's time when you have to have fairness, and you have to pay the buck, too. Thank you.
Starting to sound like a liberal there, Chuck. I don't know. Mr. Spiker, do I understand you to say that you'd ask that those officials be heard?
It's up to the board.
Well, that's if you ask that, we'll see what the board says. So if
I ask that they be heard, then
okay,
briefly.
Seconded by who was that? I heard somebody, Mr. Meyer. All in favor, and I assume you're talking all three of them, right?
Yes.
Okay. Discussion on whether they should be heard, Mr. Menninger.
Well, if I was them, I think that would put me in a tremendously uncomfortable position to be standing up here competing against each other about why one is better than the other one. I just don't object. I don't think we ought to have them up here debating who's more important than the other one. I just think that's a big mistake.
Jill Billings.
I agree. I appreciate the information I got from all three officers. I think it's unfortunate that they felt like they were in a position where they had to compare, will I do this, in a way that it sometimes was uncomfortable, and I feel like I have enough information.
Jerry Sobranek.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I agree with Mr. Spiker 100%. However, I received a letter from the Treasurer and the Register of Deeds, but I did not receive one from the county clerk, and I don't think that should be up for debate right now.
Mr. Bina.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I, too, don't agree that they should be able to argue the merits for and against. We all got the three letters, and they go into a lot of detail as to what happened. If you go back 15, 16, 17 years ago, the three salaries were not in unison. They were given salary increases in prior years for other things.
Mr. Bina, we're on the issue of whether
right.
They should address the board or not.
All right. I'll wait till later then.
Okay. Anybody else on the topic of whether they should address the board or not? Okay. Mr. Spiker.
I do it as a courtesy. These people are never seen before. I hope they don't get into discussing, which we're going to have to draw our own conclusion. But out of a courtesy, I can remember in 23 years on the board, we only denied one department head from not talking. Fairness is fairness, I think.
Mr. Geary.
Did they speak at the executive committee?
They were present but did not talk.
Okay. Do they wish to speak tonight? I don't know.
They can either head yes or no.
Before he...
We have questions, I guess. Yeah.
Maureen Friedland, I saw your hand. Microphone.
I agree with Supervisor Billings that we really have enough information here to make a decision, but I would like to hear them because I personally am a little bit embarrassed that I don't know them, and I would like this opportunity just to meet them and to maybe have them spend a minute or two talking about their role in county government.
Let me use that as a stepping off point to make an observation, which is that this is an issue that has raised some hard feelings. This should not be about particular people. This needs to be about positions. It's very, very difficult when we know these people. And some of us know some of them better than other ones. Some of us don't know any of them hardly. Some of us know some of them very well. This is about positions. It is my observation, and I'm here more than many of you are, it is my position that we have very, very good, hardworking, qualified elected officials in this county. That means those folks. It means you folks, too. So I would hope that nobody casts their vote on this issue on the basis of personalities or who you know or like or don't like or don't know or whatever the case may be. Please keep in mind that these are positions. And, in fact, we have an election coming up this fall, and we can guess who may be in those positions, but the voters may decide something different. So please keep in mind, this is about positions, not about people. Okay? On the topic of people, are those folks addressing the board, any other comments that people have? Okay. Jim Burns.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So just to clarify Mr. Spiker's amendment to speak, is this just an option? This is just an option for them. They don't have to speak. It's an option.
It's free country. Right. If they don't want to come up, they don't have to.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Jerry Sobranek.
Thank you. I was just curious why these are elected positions and what difference does this make if you're Democrat or Republican? It's something I've always wondered about.
It's the wisdom of our state leaders. Anything else on whether they should address the board? Okay. We'll try this on a voice vote. Probably isn't going to work. But all in favor of having them address, allowing them to address the board, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
There were too many. The no's have it, but there were too many ayes. I think we need to do it on the computer so that we have a record of that. Yes, if you would like to allow them to address the board. No, if you do not. Okay, yes to allow them to address the board, no to not. If you had a library, you could look up how to do that.
Tell you what, Mr. Doyle. Personal attacks never put a book in a child's hand either.
Oh, that is good. That is good. The motion to have department heads speak failed on a vote of 11 yes to 19 no. That gets us back to the resolution as presented, and I got a few names on the list here. So far, Jim Burns is at the top. Gotcha. The amendment. I'm sorry, Mr. Spiker's amendment. Jim Burns, you're at the top.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I actually have a question about the resolution, not so much about the amendment, so should I hold off?
No, you can go ahead.
Okay. Regarding the resolution, that the way it's written and stated, I had a question about the fiscal note, and I was wondering if Mr. Taunt could come up and answer a few questions on that.
Mr. Taunt.
Thanks, Bob. Where it says the cost of salary and elected roll-ups at 11.5% for this group in 2009 will be approximately $7,107. Could you explain where, what exactly is the 11.5%? Where's that number?
The 11.5 is the amount that the state has designated as a contribution to the Wisconsin Retirement Fund. So that's 11.5 is the contribution to the retirement fund for elected officials.
Okay. So when you say roll-ups, that doesn't include Social Security, anything else. That's just the county's contribution to the Wisconsin Retirement Fund.
Yes.
And is that how we do all the – is that how we – is that imply, maybe if it's okay, if I could maybe entertain a friendly amendment to explicitly state what that actually is. So I find it a little confusing. I don't know. If that's possible. So I guess I'd like to...
Are you saying that you You want it listed on this one or for in the future?
No, I would like it on this one and all future ones, just because it's a little confusing. What exactly does that 11.5 mean? Because it could mean salary, it could mean elected roll-ups, it could mean just... I guess I'd like, just for the public and for the county board, I think it'd be good practice to clean that up a little bit.
So after 11.5% in parentheses put, which constitutes Wisconsin Retirement System contribution?
Sure.
And in parentheses?
Sure, that's fine.
Is there a second to including that language in, just inserting that in there for our official record? Second by Ann Fisher, all in favor of adding that in there for clarification purposes, say aye. Opposed, no. Carried unanimously. Thank you, Jim.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And then one other question, Mr. Taunt. This chart is well organized and it's very informative, and I like how it's presented. I was wondering if we could possibly put in the percent increases for each position at each year, simply because it's on the backside. It doesn't really. You compare 2 and 3% on all positions, but then. I think it just, because I don't know if the backside's just a survey, it's not really part of the resolution.
Right.
And I think just for the public and for us as members, obviously we're concerned about, it's good information to have what is the percent increase and not just the dollar amount. So I guess maybe we could, I'd like to make another friendly amendment to.
That one. Mr. Burns, I think you're going to need to hold because we have to see if Mr. Spiker's amendment passes or the original one passes.
Oh, I understand.
So it'll be different. So I'll come back to you when we
okay.
get to that point.
Okay, thank you.
All right. Next on the list I have Don Bina.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I'm not hung up on Spiker's amendment. I am hung up on changing the three individuals who we're looking at here, because like I was going to say before, between 15 and 17 years ago, when we had a finance committee in the county, one of the issues we looked at was the differences between those three individuals, and none of these three were there at that time. So we looked at the workload, and I might even find a survey that showed the comparison, but that would be probably outdated by now already. But they were not getting the same salaries, because in prior years, some of the salary increases went into something other than salaries. And you can look at the sheriff's department with the share ride that they have to and from the workplace, which is probably going out. But I'm not about to let this change, because we did an intensive study, the finance and the personnel, too, department, on the differences between the three. And we concluded at that point in time that there was a lot of difference between their job, but there wasn't that much difference between the individuals and the responsibility, so we decided to pay them all the same, period.
Bridget Flood.
I just wanted to disagree with Mr. Spiker's statement that the way to figure this against comparables wasn't fair. Having sat on at least 1 million bargaining committees from AFSCME 2484 with the county, I would submit to you that checking comparables is not only a fair method, it is the fairest method you could use to decide this.
Ralph Geary.
Thank you. I do have questions of Mr. Taunt. So while we're on comparables, why didn't we get this? When we had a personnel committee, when we had department heads or elected, they always gave us a list of comparable counties or comparable whatever, what they were getting paid. But we didn't get it in our packet.
It's on the back of the resolution,
yeah.
Ralph.
You've got it.
Oh,
on the back of the resolution.
Turn it over and make it easier. Okay. Internally, are they our lowest paid department heads? Or do we have any lower paid department heads than them on our internal comparables?
I believe we have some lower paid department heads. I would have to check to be sure.
But they're probably near the bottom then? You're thinking of printing or something, I suppose.
They're lower end, yeah.
Do we have non-department heads, like, I don't know if the word's regular employees or union that make more money than they do?
Yes.
And they don't get to accumulate sick days towards their retirement, upon retirement for their health insurance?
Not after the point where they become elected officials.
Okay. So most of them have been in that elected position for a number of years, so they haven't been accumulating for quite a few years then.
Right.
They just kept whatever they had at that point.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Is that it for you, Mr. Geary? Tom Rauch.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Let me help put some of this in perspective. The proposal that came to the executive committee proposed 3% across the board. We had some input from the clerk. We'd have subsequent input from the treasurer and the register of deeds. It was my motion that was made and sustained by executive committee to change the clerk's compensation from the other. And it, frankly, was my presentation that really was different from what it was in the clerk's letter to the executive committee, and which the entire county board has in front of them this evening. My proposal for that, frankly, was wrapped around my understanding of specific duties assigned in the clerk's office and within the past 2 years, and I'm specifically talking about the voting responsibilities with regard to the statewide voter registration system. And I would suggest, with some room to negotiate, but I may be of the supervisors on this floor, the one that has studied that issue the most, is most aware of the details, complexities, and horrible failures of that system mandated on us by our not very friends in Madison. And I point the finger at Republicans, Democrats, Assembly and Senate, and the governor himself, any of which could have chosen to make that system be better. But what has arrived in the clerk's offices, not only the county clerk, but the municipal clerks also, is a disaster for software and data management, and it requires an extensive amount of effort to try and keep it up to date, to do better than what they gave us, and to make the system try to work seamlessly. I've watched that happen through several elections now. The state was mandated to have that to us valid, correct, and working 2.5 years ago, and it still isn't as good as it was supposed to be when it started. But I've watched the people in the clerk's office struggle with this. I call that an unfunded mandate from the state. And it is because of that that I proposed this change. Now, quite frankly, I would not have done so if that unfunded mandate had come with some support, additional staffing within the office, some extra hours, not even a whole person, but some way to deal with this disaster that they sent us. They offered no help. And so it was that motivation, besides all the other things that I see in the clerk's office, that gave me motivation to propose that amendment. Now, I have told all three of these people, the clerk, the treasurer, and the register of deeds, that it's my personal opinion that the comparables that were presented with this proposal lead me to believe very strongly that, number one, we're getting stunningly good service for a very modest fee. I was even further stunned looking at a number of the comparables elsewhere to see it's even worse in some of those other counties, which are presumed to be comparable. And I'm not in favor of this being the level of compensation. I would be supportive of something that was suggested earlier, is why in the world are at least two of these offices, the treasurer and the register of deeds, even elective office? I don't see any point in that. And I would help to try and change that, but that isn't going to happen this evening. That isn't going to happen in La Crosse County. Those are state statutes. That it's a 2 to 10 year aggressive effort to make those kinds of changes. We can't deal with that tonight. My proposal on this was because of the statewide voter registration system as an unfunded mandate and the extra work that it mandates in the clerk's office, and that was my objective. Thank you.
Mr. Geary.
Thank you. Just a comment about the steps. I'm sure the elected officials were happy when they moved it from 2 to 4 years, but the difficult part for the county is, Bill, we can have adjust these if we think. So you have to figure out into 4 years where everybody else we do annually. They're not going to get a step if you're a union member or a department head or something, depending on the pay scale where you are. As long as you're receiving steps, you're going to get another 3 or 4% bump every time you get a step, in addition to whatever the increase negotiated or set is. So other people may move at a much higher rate than this over 4 years, because
It's a difficult decision because you've got to set it out into the future so many years. So I think Mr. Spiker is probably on the right track, because if anybody else in the county gets one step increase in the next 4 years, they're going to end up getting a bigger percentage raise over the four-year period probably than these people are.
Vicki Burke, did I see your hand up?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Just a correction. Isn't it only the DA and the sheriff that went to 4 years?
No,
these are all
positions.
Of these as well?
Okay. These were the second step of that. Those other ones were previous, and now this year it kicks in for the rest of them. Mr. Spiker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. What Tom was talking about, I agree with. But he didn't do that same thing to the treasurer or the treasurer or register of deeds. What I'm trying to say is, if we do it for one, we should have did, and he did a thorough study for the other two. So all I'm trying to do is even the playing field and some future board, because in their wisdom, the state split these apart. They should have been all in the same for a four-year term. And then evaluate them and evaluate what they do, because I think all the positions are underfunded. But we'd have to have some type of study. We had a study for the non-union employees. And as Ralph said, the step increases in that are come along with when they get a 2% raise, the regular employees, there's also step increase. They get no step increase. The biggest thing they got is they got to get elected. How would you like to come to work every day or every year and decide if you're going to be elected or ain't going to be elected? You don't happen. Thank God it didn't happen to me at the university. I'd never be there. But I want to bring up about Mr. Bina, because I chaired finance many, many moons ago. And he's exactly right. We did try. We checked at that time, and we tried. We evened everything up. That's exactly what we did. That's all I'm trying to do now is keep it even. Then someplace, some future board can really do a serious study about these elected people, because they're department heads in that, and I looked at some of them. They're third in some of these departments, yet they're department heads, but they're third compared to other departments in that staff. It's a fairness issue, and people don't like it. That's the way it goes.
Further discussion. That's brilliant, Jack. I like that. Good closing. Further discussion, questions, comments. Joe Veenstra.
I wasn't sure. Do they have this exact same benefit structure?
Bob Taunt.
Yes.
Well, no, except for the carryover of that sick leave thing is different.
Between positions.
Or are you saying with among each other or with compared to other staff?
Among each other.
Oh, yeah, same benefits for each other. Okay. Further discussion? All right. Mr. Spiker's amendment is what is on the floor. Let's vote on that on the computer. So if you are in... I think this is what Mr. Spiker intended to do, giving them all a 5-3-3-3, as opposed to two of them having 3-3-3-3. Okay, got that? So if you're in favor of Mr. Spiker's approach of 5%, then followed by 3-3-3-3, vote yes. If you are in favor of all of them the same, no, not them the same, sorry, two of them being all 3% and the clerk being 5%, then vote no. I think I got that. All right.
Any problem?
Yeah, I'm just going to see you again.
Mr. Spiker's amendment has passed on a vote of 23-7, so that gets us to the resolution as amended. Further discussion with regard to the resolution as amended. Mr. Menninger.
I just wanted to clarify, you only gave people two choices of either voting for Mr. Spiker's amendment or Mr. Rauch's. There was another option. That was threes for everybody, just as a clarification.
Nobody made that motion. Correct. Could get them all a pay reduction, too, I suppose. So, I don't think anybody's proposing that. So. Further discussion? Mr. Burns.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I'd like to go back to the fiscal note then and just insert the percentage increases for each office. So I guess it would be 2009, 5%, 2010, 3%, 2011, 3%, 2012, 3%.
Is there a second to adding that clarification? Second by Bill Brockmiller. All in favor say aye. Opposed, no. Carried unanimously. All righty. Anything further? Oh, Jim, can you put that in writing on the amendment form so that Marion has that? Bobby Erickson?
On the
clarification one? We didn't do that yet, did we? We voted on Jim Burns' clarification thing on putting percentages on. So you voted yes on that, though, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Sit next to John, you just have these stray no votes every once in a while to keep people off guard. All in favor of the resolution as amended, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
Now we have no Mr. Erickson, anybody else? Tom Rauch and Brad Paff. The resolution as amended passed. Mr. Rauch, next item.
Boy, I guess we're having fun. Item 34-5, regarding adoption of contract for Deputy Sheriff's Union, now therefore be resolved that the tentative agreements for changes to the Deputy Sheriff's contract for 2007-2008, a copy of which tentative agreements are hereto attached, be ratified as the changes to the working agreement between La Crosse County and the Deputy Sheriff's effective as specified in the agreement. Be it further resolved that the Personnel and Finance Departments are authorized and directed to take such action as is necessary to implement the intent of this resolution. Fiscal note, the estimated cost of salary and fringe benefits for this settlement is $73,479 for 07, $98,408 for 2008, or a package increase of 3.64% over base for 2007 and 4.70% for 2008, for which contingency funding has been budgeted. There are 29 employees in this unit. I move its approval.
Moved by Mr. Rauch, seconded by Bill Brockmiller. Discussion, questions? All in favor? Oh, Mr. Geary.
Well, just clarification, Bob. It kind of tails off that last resolution we had. It says 2% increases, but you made all the steps larger numbers too, right? Some of the steps got adjusted monetarily. So those steps were bigger. So then if you received a step, you get a bigger, you get two plus whatever. And what is the gap on those steps? Is it 3% or 4% or 3%? So you'd end up with 5, actually, if you got any kind of steps coming.
Okay. Further discussion or comments, questions? All in favor say aye. Opposed, no. One no, Bobby Erickson. That passes. Mr. Rauch.
Mr. Chairman, I have item 35-5 regarding direction of the county administrator on the 2009 annual budget. Now, therefore, be resolved that the county administrator is directed to prepare a 2009 annual budget in cooperation with the county department heads, which minimizes negative impact on county programs and services while staying within the expected state-imposed operating levy of 2% and the county board imposed limit on the debt levy mill rate of 0.52. Be it further resolved that the budget shall consider options and issues identified by the La Crosse County Board and governing committees. Fiscal note, the 2007 adopted budget tax levy is $26,900,533 with the average total tax rate of 3.60 per thousand. If the operating levy is increased by the maximum of 2%, it would generate approximately $500,000. The affected impact of the county portion of taxes on an average home will rise approximately 1.2% after accounting for the value of new construction. I move its approval.
Seconded by Margaret Wood. A clarification from Executive Committee where it says county administrator reviewed only, given that it is his budget, he is in favor of this. Discussion on this item or questions? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. One no. Bobby Erickson.
Item 36-5, regarding acknowledge the best of public service. Whereas the following employees have been a faithful part in providing the best of public service to La Crosse County. Calvin Marks in the Highway Department, 35 plus years. Bridget Flood in Human Services Department, 18 plus years. Peter Kendhammer in Carroll Heights Apartments, 14 plus years. And whereas it is the wish of the County Board of Supervisors to acknowledge long and faithful service on behalf of the citizens of La Crosse County, now therefore it be resolved that a resolution extending our congratulations be recorded in the La Crosse County Board proceedings and a certificate of our actions be presented as an expression of our gratitude. I move approval.
Moved by Tom Roach, seconded by Margaret Wood. Discussion on this one? Anybody opposed to mentioning Bridget Flood in there? Thank you for your many years, Bridget. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Carried unanimously.
And finally, Mr. Chair, item 37-5, an ordinance revision for the Historic Sites Preservation Commission. This is an ordinance to amend sections 1.42 paren 4 and 1.49 paren 4 of the General Code of La Crosse County, Wisconsin, regarding the Historical Sites Preservation Commission. The effect of this ordinance change will be to move the reporting committee for this preservation commission from the executive committee to Planning, Resource, and Development Committee. I present this for its first reading.
That will be held over for 30 days. For new board members, when you have a proposed ordinance change, you do not normally vote on those at the meeting that they're brought forward. They're held over for 30 days so people can think about them, get any public input, and so forth. And because they are a more permanent, more formal change in our laws, we give them a little different procedure. So under normal situation, we'd be voting on those the following month. Maureen Friedland, you had your hand up.
But last term, didn't we also have some discussion about discussing these the first time around?
Absolutely, so you can. Absolutely.
Yeah, so that if there are items that we don't understand or more clarification on, we
right.
can have
the
that.
Normal procedure would be that we'd hold it over, but if people do want to discuss it, debate it, ask questions, you're very welcome to do that.
Okay, so with all due respect, Mr. Chairman, just don't go too quickly.
Sorry. Looked like people wanted to get home, so I'm just trying to help out. Are there any questions on it? Okay. That'll come up next month then. Is that it for you, Mr. Rauch? Health and Human Services Board, Sharon Hampson.
I have item 38.5, support in tax state tax on alcohol for alcohol treatment and prevention. Whereas Wisconsin has the highest adult binge drinking rate and the second highest college binge drinking rate in the nation, and whereas alcohol and drug abuse is the fourth leading cause of death in Wisconsin behind heart disease, cancer, and stroke, whereas each Wisconsin resident pays $1.82 a year in beer taxes but pays $18.64 in alcohol treatment costs, $154 in alcohol-related health care costs, and $500 in alcohol-related criminal justice and societal costs, whereas Wisconsin has the third lowest beer tax in the nation, and whereas the Wisconsin Public Health Council that was appointed by the governor recommends that there be an increase in the alcohol tax to offset some of the alcohol-related health expenses. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the La Crosse County Board hereby encourages Governor Doyle, Senator Kopanky, and State Representatives Hipsch and Schilling and the WCA to support an increase in Wisconsin alcohol tax to be used to offset alcohol-related health and law enforcement expenses, and directs the county clerk to send a copy of this resolution to each of the said state officials, and there is no direct cost to the county. I move its approval and wish to speak to it.
Moved by Sharon Hampson. Is there a second? Second by Bill Brockmiller. Sharon Hampson.
Okay, you have some supporting material on the back of that page, which has some graphs which are a little bit difficult to understand in that size, but what they're telling you is these are backup statistics to some of the whereases in the resolution. One point of clarification, Doug Mormon put this on our desk tonight. you'll notice in the therefore be it resolved, it says increase alcohol tax, wherein some of the whereases beer taxes were highlighted. So it is the resolution encourages an increase in state tax on all alcohol products sold in Wisconsin. This is in philosophically in the same vein as raising cigarette taxes to help pay for cessation, education, and treatment. So that's the impetus behind it. And if you have specific questions about other states and what they pay for spirits, table wine, and beer, I do have a chart, but I don't want to belabor you with too many statistics. So you also have another page of supporting information in the form of a PowerPoint. I would draw your attention to the lower left corner. Our neighboring states charge 2 to 3 times more, and you see the statistics there. So we're definitely out of line with the rest of the country and certainly out of line with our area. Thank you.
Further discussion? John Menninger.
Well, I wasn't going to talk on this, but I voted no in committee, and I'm going to vote no again tonight, and I don't want to belabor it, but I'm just against this. I know there's all kinds of problems out there with excessive alcohol consumption and drunk drivers and all that kind of stuff, but raising the tax doesn't necessarily correlate to reductions of any of those behaviors. And to me, it is. I just don't think it's going to accomplish whatever anybody wants to accomplish. It all does is raise taxes. One time when I was in the state legislature, we were debating some issue down there dealing with alcohol consumption, and somebody called me the representative from Heilman's, and so maybe I'm trying to be consistent here, but it is an industry that provides a lot of jobs and opportunities in our area, and I just think it's not necessary to do this, though.
So. Jerry Sobranek.
Thank you. I represent La Crosse County on the Mayor's Alcohol Oversight Committee, and I just can't support this. You're going about this backwards. You might just go to prohibition. What more can you do to the people that depend on businesses that dispense alcohol? It's my opinion, I don't know, it can be argued, but they go under entrapment. They're scrutinized every day. People are around there checking them. It's a game of tag, trying to catch them and do something wrong. You're going about this backwards. What you got to do is go to the people that have the problem, and you got to educate them before they become alcoholics and abuse this stuff. This is all wrong.
Don Vina.
I thank you, Mr. Chair. I agree with the last two speakers. During the last 50 years, they tried to raise the beer tax. How many times in the state? It never has happened. The beer has a big lobby. If you raise the tax, there's no guarantee it's going to be put where you want it either. It's not going to happen. And all you're going to do is raise the tax, and the state has a problem with their money now, and I'm not sure if they can handle all that prosperity that you're going to bring in.
Jill Billings.
I'm proud of what we've done to be fiscally conservative and to come in low on taxes, where people in my district, some of us, me included, actually paid less on our county taxes this year. And I look at this, so I'm not a fan of taxes. I don't think anybody in this room is. But I look at this not as a punishment to people who drink, but as a user's tax. As you see by all the statistics, we do have an issue in this state and in this county with alcohol. It costs money to educate people. I liked Supervisor Sobranek's idea to educate people, but that costs money. Providing treatment for people costs money. And this is a way that I can think of that we tax the people who use the alcohol, and that helps to pay for the price of being a county and a state that has such a drinking culture. We see it in our human services. We see it in Children's Protective Services. You saw the statistics about drinking and domestic violence. We pay for it in economic support, where people who have alcohol issues have a harder time keeping jobs. We see it. I was at a meeting with First District judges last week, and we were talking about our OWI treatment court. I asked the judges at the table what percentage of the people that they see in their courtrooms have cases that are related to alcohol, and the responses ranged from 70% to 90% of the people that they see in their courtrooms are in trouble in part because of alcohol issues. This is a huge, overwhelming problem. We cannot fund this anymore with our current tax levy. You can see our clinical services department is barely keeping their head above water. And this is a revenue stream that I can see where people who have the problem help pay for the problem, and I will be voting for it.
Bill Brackmiller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Actually, Supervisor Billings' comments pretty much echoed mine to a T.
Ralph Geary.
Thank you. Well, first off, Wisconsin is one of the highest tax states overall in the country. You could pick out specific taxes they may be low on, but overall, we're one of the highest tax states in the country. I think we're seventh or eighth on everything I've ever read. So to me, that just says the state ought to set their priorities better. How many breweries are in the state of Wisconsin? This is a production-type state. We export a lot of beer. We can't possibly drink all the beer we make in Wisconsin, and those breweries have to be paying a lot of taxes, property taxes, personal property taxes, and the myriad of taxes that go along with those big corporations like Miller and, you know, City Brewery and Town Line and Klugel, Stevens Point. You know, they go on and on. And the state, for example, moves money from the gas tax the last few years. They're moving hundreds of millions of dollars trying to figure out how to balance their budget from one thing to another. So this isn't anything for the state of Wisconsin except another form of revenue. And it's just another revenue stream they could be using on this or that or whatever they'd like. So I'm not voting for it.
Margaret Wood.
Thank you. One of the models that we could look at, though, to see that this type of thing does help the general population is the cigarette tax that has definitely helped in the reduction of the number of cigarette smokers. So it's not a model that has not been used and has seen success.
Maureen Friedland.
I just wanted to ask the question. I wanted to refer to the legislative committee minutes, and there weren't any. Why is that, and when does that committee report?
I don't know why we wouldn't have. Normally, we would have minutes from that meeting. I assume Cheryl does them. I don't. When was that meeting? Last one. Yeah, I don't. Mr. Spiker, do you know?
Mr. Chairman, I think we get meetings from the standing committees, but we don't get meetings minutes from a lot of meetings. Commission on Aging, which I used to chair in that, they never went to the board. I'd like to saw them all go to the board, but that's
okay.
We're just standing committees as far as.
Okay, that is the answer. Okay. It would be on the website, though.
Okay, that's a good answer.
There.
Thank you.
Okay. Any other discussion? All right, we're going to do this one on the computer. If you are in favor of the resolution, vote aye. If you are opposed, vote no. Maureen, we're still waiting for you. Still don't have yours, Maureen. Here we go. The resolution has passed on a vote of 17 to 13. Next item.
Excuse me, I'm just trying to catch my breath here. I'm not on good terms with success. Okay. All right. I have item 39.5, authorization to transfer funds from the Health Department's reserve to be used for increase in staff time, services, and equipment for public health preparedness programs. Whereas a resolution in 1995 authorized La Crosse County to coordinate public health bioterrorism preparation services in a five-county area and with the Ho-Chunk Tribe, whereas La Crosse County has been the fiscal agent and lead agency to provide consistency to the regional preparedness and response efforts relating to the acts of bioterrorism, etc., whereas there is $300,339 in Health Department's reserve fund balance that was received from the federal government in prior years for this purpose and now needs to be distributed and spent by the five-county area and the Ho-Chunk Tribe. Now, therefore, be it resolved that $121,732 be transferred from the reserve to be earmarked and spent for or by Buffalo, Jackson, Monroe, Trempealeau County, and the Ho-Chunk Tribe. Be it therefore resolved that $102,954 be transferred from the reserve and applied to the Bioterrorism Grant Org 8003 to offset a reduction of federal bioterrorism funding that's been included in the 2008 budget. Be it further resolved that $75,653 be transferred from the reserve to proper accounts in the Administration, Health Education, Public Health, Nursing, and Vector Control Divisions of the Health Department budget for staff salary fringes and other operating and equipment expenses. Fiscal note, $45,000 of the $75,653 will be allocated between staff overtime, increasing the hours of part-time staff for use with contract staff or limited-term employees. The remainder of the $75,653 will be spent on other operating and equipment expenses specifically related to public health preparedness. I move its approval.
Moved by Sharon Hampson. Is there a second? Second by Bill Brockmiller. Discussion? Questions? Because this is not in the budget, this requires a two-thirds vote of the entire board for passage. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
One no, Bobby Erickson. That passes. One more for you, Ms. Hampson.
Yes. Item 40-5, creation of La Crosse County Long-Term Care Coordinating Committee. Whereas the La Crosse County Long-Term Care Council was created with the inception of the Family Care Pilot, whereas the creation of a regional long-term care management organization called Western Wisconsin Cares ends the statutory requirement for a local long-term care council, whereas members of the current long-term care council expressed interest in maintaining a local coordinating committee for long-term care interests, whereas the La Crosse County Long-Term Care Coordinating Committee will be complementary and not in competition with the governing function of Western Wisconsin Cares. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the La Crosse County Board of Supervisors establish the creation of a Long-Term Care Coordinating Committee as advisory to the La Crosse County Health and Human Services Board with membership appointed by the chair of the La Crosse County Health and Human Services Board. Further, be it resolved that the membership of the La Crosse County Long-Term Care Coordinating Council Committee include but be not limited to the following as listed. Fiscal note, since the Long-Term Care Council of the county is currently functioning, there will be minimum costs for this new committee to meet quarterly for coordination of services, including staff time and minimum supplies and reproduction costs. I move its approval.
Moved by Sharon Hampson, second by Vicki Burke. Discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Mr. Ebert, did you have a question? The second,
yes, I did.
He had his hand up as I was calling, so we'll.
I suppose I'm too close to the front. You have trouble seeing me now.
Well, you have to get a little higher. Next, you're going to be right there.
I just wondered, is Western Wisconsin Cares, are they interested in having an advisory board? Did that come from them, or is this just something we're trying to do
This is not an advisory board to Western Wisconsin Cares. They'll have their own board headed by Tara Johnson. This is a committee that got started when we got family care, and now that family care is becoming regionalized, they just want to continue talking about long-term care needs in the community because what they've found is that it encompasses more than the CMO.
So it's a group that kind of just wants to meet on their own without, there's not a particular mandate or anything?
That's right. The mandate has expired, but they would like to continue to meet and inform the county on long-term care issues.
Thank you.
All right. Now, all in favor say aye. Opposed, no. The noes are Ray Ebert, Don Bina, Bobby Erickson. That passes. Is that it for you, Ms. Hampson? Judiciary and Law, Vicki Burke.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Item number 41-5, ordinance number 42, regarding an ordinance to repeal and recreate Section 30.81, Paragraph 11 of Chapter 30 of the General Code of La Crosse County, Wisconsin, regarding no-wake zones. I ask that we would suspend the rules and vote on this ordinance at this meeting. It has been passed by the City of La Crosse, and it, since the boating season is ready to begin, we would like to do so. We have a member of the Joint Harbor Commission on the board, if you would like more information related to that.
Second by Don Meyer. Don, can you explain why you're asking also that this be done tonight as opposed to waiting 30 days?
Well, as you know, La Crosse, the City of La Crosse tried to put a no-wake zone in front of the Radisson and along in there about 2 years ago, and they've been stumbling to try to get it done all that time. I think the first public hearing was 2 years ago, and it's finally now starting to happen, and all this is doing is having our ordinance match theirs, and will be able to enforce it by our officers on the river. And there's really not a lot of discussion. It's kind of a no-brainer. We just go ahead and do it.
And the pressing need is because boating season starts.
The boating season is starting, and we have to get going. I don't know, many of you know, we're only out there 2 days a week, the Fridays and Saturdays and Sundays and holidays at the present time. So we want to get this gets going so it can get enforced.
The motion is to suspend the rules to consider this tonight. Further discussion on that, Mr. Ebert?
Yes, thank you. I voted for it, and I'll vote for it when it comes up. But to suspend the rules, I think we still want to give people the opportunity to comment since we didn't hold a public session or anything. I think it's a mistake not to give people the opportunity to comment to us.
If anybody has anything to say, they should say it. Thank you.
Mr. Veenstra?
Thank you, Chairman Doyle. The one thing I wanted to notice, give the Board of Supervisors information about was that the officers that do this were there, and their intent initially is not to, quote-unquote, enforce it, but to let people know about it, give warnings, inform the community about it, enforce it when they need to, once it's been in place for a while. I think it's, I agree with Mr. Meyer that it's a no-brainer. Apparently the DNR can issue tickets and keep the money. And now this would allow the county to do the same thing. Thank you.
Further discussion on suspension of the rules. All in favor of suspending the rules to consider it tonight, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
The noes are, raise your hands, please. Ray Ebert. Maureen Friedland. Jerry Sobranek. Bobby Erickson. That passes. So we will vote on that tonight. Discussion on the proposed ordinance. Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
Noes are Bobby Erickson. That passes. And is that it for you, Ms. Burke?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Public Works and Infrastructure, Mr. Spiker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Item 42-5, approved unanimously by Executive Committee, approved unanimously by the Public Works Committee. Authorization transfer funds from budget reserve to the capital improvement for construction of sanitary sewer system from Veterans Memorial Campground to the Village of West Salem. Now, therefore, be resolved that La Crosse County Board of Supervisors hereby accepts a low bid of Hess Excavating in an amount of $109,585. Be it further resolved, the Finance Department be hereby authorized to transfer $50,000 from the campground expansion budget reserve account to the Capital Improvement Parks Campgrounds account. Fiscal note, total cost will be $161,457. Village of West Salem cost share will amount to $16,925, leaving the county share of this project at $144,532. $100,000 is budgeted, and $44,532 will be transferred from account 1132-79076, Capital Improvement Budget Reserve, to account 1132-87034, Capital Improvement Parks Campgrounds. I move for approval, Mr. Chairman.
Moved by Mr. Spiker, seconded by Ann Fisher. Discussion? Because this was not in the budget, this requires a two-thirds vote of the board. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. One no, Bobby Erickson. That passes. Next item.
Item 43-5, approved by the Public Works Committee, unanimous vote, approval of Goose Island Deer Management Plan and Managed Deer Hunt for 2008. Whereas in early 2006, a task force was formed with representatives from the U.S. Corps of Engineers, Army Corps of Engineers, U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources, La Crosse County, and the Town of Shelby to implement a Goose Island Management Plan to alleviate negative impacts of overabundance deer herd in the Goose Island. And now therefore be resolved that La Crosse County Board does hereby approve the Goose Island Deer Management Plan for 2008. Be it further resolved that La Crosse County Board does hereby authorize the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources and other agencies that form the task force to conduct a managed deer hunt at Goose Island Park on December 13th and 14th, which collaborates with the current statewide deer December herd control hunt. December 20 and 21st, if conflicts arise with duck season, regulations, or bad weather, utilizing the NASA to find and choose physically challenged hunters as described in the plan. Be it further resolved, the La Crosse County Board does hereby grant exception to probation set forth in 1903 sub 1 sub 3 of the county code to permit the possession, use, and discharge of firearms by participants of the managed deer hunt Goose Island Park on December 13th and 14th, 2008, December 20th, 21st, the conflicts with duck season regulations and bad weather. Be it further resolved, the county board chair is authorized to sign after review by corporation counsel any permits required by the state and federal agencies in order to hold this hunt. Fiscal note is no cost to La Crosse County. I move for approval, and I'd like to speak to it, Mr. Chairman.
Moved by Mr. Spiker, seconded by Mr. Leon Paff.
We have Ron Licky from the DNR. He's been waiting here patiently. This is the third year in a row he's been at the end of the meeting. So I ask that he be heard to explain a little bit in detail for the nine new supervisors. And also with it, I included a Goose Island Deer Management Plan for 2008. I move that Mr. Licky be heard, too, Mr. Chairman.
That Mr. Licky be heard, seconded by Mr. Geary. That would be really rude to vote down on this one. So all in favor, say aye. Opposed, no. Carried unanimously. Ron?
Howdy. This would be our third year conducting a managed hunt down at Goose Island. This task team was put together with the two federal agencies, the state and the county, and then the township also. We've been working the last 3 years. I think we've been doing a pretty good job at reducing the herd down there and alleviating a lot of the negative impacts associated with it. The deer are definitely starting to look a little healthier. We're seeing some of our necropsy work with parasites and stuff like that, they seem to be less parasites with them. Talking with the La Crosse County Sheriff's Department, they're getting less calls on car deer collisions on Highway 35. So we're starting to meet some of our goals. Are we there yet with that herd population? The task team doesn't think so. We're getting close. This year, what we're going to be working on is going to be actually looking at developing a longer-term management plan that would be 3 to 5 years. Obviously, it'd be an adaptive approach to the management plan. You know, obviously, if we find serious diseases like CWD or something like that, we'd make other recommendations. But so far, we've been clean with certain diseases such as CWD or TB that we'd be very concerned with. So we're getting there, but I think one more year of this, and this would give us another year of data, I think would be very useful for us developing a long-term management plan.
Any questions? Maureen Friedland.
A couple questions, please. There's reference to public input meetings in 2006 and 2007, but I didn't notice anything about 2008. Was there not a public input meeting in 2008, and why not?
We haven't had any public outcry, so we didn't think that there was need for a public meeting at this point in time. We will be going, when we develop this longer-term management plan, we will be holding public input sessions at that time to review them plans, but we did not hold one. So far, I know of none of no complaints over the management and the current plans that have been going on down there with the managed hunts. It's been very well received by the vast majority of the public that all of our agencies, the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, Fish and Wildlife Service, the county, and the state, we get a lot of calls on it, and appreciative calls on it, that we're doing the right thing. So we just did not consider holding a public meeting at this point in time.
So it's a voluntary call whether there's a public outcry or not as to whether you have a meeting?
I could answer that for you, Maureen, because I'm on the Wildlife Committee, and I'm the member that's on the task force there with Mr. Litke. And yes, we had them in 2006 and 2007, like you said, at that time. But at the Wildlife Committee meeting, we figured that things were going quite smoothly. And it had been, like Mr. Litke said, there had been no public outcry for a public meeting. So we did not host a public meeting, but if people think it warrants it, we could have another one. But the Badger Sportsman's Club is also involved with us and work with us, and that's where the first one was held. And our second one, where did we have that public hearing? Was that here, or was that at the Sportsman's Club?
Well, we had the one at the bowling. They didn't charge us anything and stuff like that. So we had it there, and then we had the second one here at the county.
If anyone would like to sit in on Wildlife Committee meetings, you'd have to look at the calendar when we have them. We have another one in June is when we'll have our next one. If you've got some comments or want to have us give us direction on how I should work with that task team.
Okay. I have one more question,
sure.
If I might. What is this... this tick-borne disease that I can't pronounce.
Ehrlichiosis?
Yes. What is that? Can you just...
It's like... a good comparison would be like Lyme's disease, but it goes... It's a new disease, actually. It's been out west, and it's been migrating easterly. And we see it specifically where we have a lot of deer. It's associated with deer. The ticks are associated with deer. And they're the host species of this disease, and then the ticks get onto humans and carry that on. It is, I do have some coworkers that have developed the disease in the past in Wisconsin. One of them was one of the first people about 5 years ago. It's a little bit more rapid, and it can cause serious damage if untreated or if not diagnosed. Our medical health professionals in the area are getting up to speed on this disease in the last 5 years, so they're getting better at diagnosing it, but it is a little bit different treatment than Lyme's disease. A lot of times it's diagnosed as Lyme's disease, and the treatments aren't always the same, and it can cause very serious health problems or long-term disabilities.
Margaret Wood.
Thank you. I'm just going to try to sneak this question on since it's under management. How is the public responding in terms of reducing the feeding of the deer that also was an issue?
That's actually gone very well. I go down there on a regular basis to do my road indices and stuff like that, so we've seen quite a bit of a reduction. There is a little bit of feeding that still occurs down there, but not nearly as much as it has in the past, and that's one of the issues the state... as a whole, we'd like to see it banned, artificial feeding and baiting banned statewide. We've been, at the state level, been advocating this for many years because the science just shows that you end up with problems. Anytime you put an artificial energy source into a wild system or a natural system, it just causes problems, either some of the negative impacts like we were talking about with car-deer collisions, or we are having some deer down there that I'm having necropsy work done yet, and I'm still waiting for them reports. They were found down by the south end where bird feeding takes place quite heavily, and they were found right in that area. And I think that's attributed to some of these food sources that the deer typically don't eat. A good example would be you don't feed your horse certain things. You feed them the proper foods, and it causes them digestive problems and things like that. So,
are there any no-feeding deer signs at the entrance to the park?
Yes, and I know I work with Russ Wilson, our warden and stuff, and I've talked to some of the county sheriff's department and stuff, and they pretty much at this point in time when the county passed the ban, you know, everybody kind of agreed that, okay, there'll be an educational period or informational period, just kind of warning people and things like that. You know, don't do this. There's a lot of reasons why not to, for the health of the deer, the health of the habitat and things like that. And we've seen a dramatic decrease in that. So that's a good sign. I think that's going to be a major, one of the major tools in development of the whole management plan once we develop it this year. I think that's a good tool to use.
Mr. Bina.
Well, just one other comment. I'd suggest you print up a bunch of signs. We got all kinds of farmers this last winter who had turkeys eating out of their corn crib. You need to put a sign up by that crib that we shouldn't feed them.
Yeah.
We have right on that. All right. Any other questions, Mr. Spiker?
I'd just like to add that there's five government agencies working together. Now, where do you see that anyplace? And I'd like to thank Ron and Leon Paff and the news media, too, is that this started out, we didn't know which was going to happen, because in other parts of the country, it's been a tough road to hoe, and through Ron and everybody, how they publicized it. And if I understand it correctly, Ron, the next one, if we have a 2009 one, well, there will be informational meetings in that. Didn't you tell me something about the U.S. Fish and Wildlife or the Corps insist on that?
What we're working on this year is to take the data and the information that we gathered from the previous managed hunts down there, and we're looking at putting together more of a substantial document for a longer-term management plan. When would be the appropriate times to hold a managed hunt? And we're going to be looking at indices and stuff like that. So that's coming together. But the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, or depending on how the task team, they have certain regulations that they have to follow with public meetings and stuff like that. So they might have to host a meeting. We might have to host a meeting. The county may want to host a meeting. And we're still developing that. But there will be public input meetings on that management plan. We're getting pretty close with developing that.
The only thing I'd add, Jim Spiropoulos and Mary Kaufman, too, were instrumental in it. I know if I say something, I'd always leave somebody's name out, but this is really something that I never believed would happen, the cooperation in that we've had, and we're finally getting a plan down there, too.
Yeah.
The only ones that don't like it sometime would probably be the deers that are being shot, but it's preserving the other ones. Thank you.
Any other questions? Thank you, Ron.
Thank you.
Further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. One no and Fisher. That passes. Next item, Mr. Spiker.
Item 44-5 was approved by the committee on a 3-2 vote. Support use of biodiesel fuel. Whereas in February 2006, La Crosse County Board supported the use of biodiesel fuel by La Crosse County Highway Department and encouraged other public and private entities to follow the lead of La Crosse County in the use of biodiesel fuel. Whereas biodiesel fuel on, this is April 23rd, 08, was 421.9 per gallon, less federal tax of 24.3 cents for diesel. Whereas although the price of biodiesel may now be more than diesel fuel, the benefits of purchasing the biodiesel fuel may be worth the increased cost by using the renewable fuel that reduces emissions of diesel, particulate matter, and air toxics, thereby promoting positive air quality and providing stimulus for the western Wisconsin agriculture industry and economic development. for our region. Now, therefore, be resolved that La Crosse County Board does hereby approve the continued use of biodiesel fuel by the Highway Department, provided that the cost of the biodiesel fuel does not exceed the cost of grade 2 diesel fuel with no additive by the amount of 3% per gallon. A fiscal note, if biodiesel fuel exceeds the cost of diesel fuel by 3%, the increased annual cost may be $14,400 based on the following assumptions. 120,000 gallons a year times 12 cents a gallon, $14,400 based on a $4 gallon diesel times 3% equals 12%. I did not support this, Mr. Chairman. So,
Mr. Paff, are you moving to approve?
I'm moving to approve, and I wish to speak on it.
Seconded by Mr. Bina. Go ahead, Mr. Paff.
Yes, as far as the fiscal note, that was put in there just to explain that that's the most it could possibly cost. It may not cost anything, and it may be a savings by continuing to always buy the biodiesel fuel. They're using the biodiesel fuel at this time at the Highway Department, and they have been, and they've been in the lead with it for the last 2 years, and they like it. It's just that at this particular time, the last two times it's come through, if you notice, the B2 does not cost more, but we have used up to the B10, which is a 10% soy-based. And then the other one is a B5, which is, and they have seen no difference in performance. It's all been good at this point. I think La Crosse County has been admired at other places, especially at the highway committee meetings where I went to, that they've been mentioned as being one of the leaders in using soy biodiesel for both the environment and for helping support the American farmer, soybean farmer. Thank you.
Ralph Geary.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This has budgetary implications. Many departments do what the highway department does. Denny calls around and gets the price of fuel when he needs it, and he orders the cheapest one. If it's biodiesel, he orders biodiesel. If it's regular diesel, he orders the regular diesel. This, Leon had this wrong. It won't be a savings. It can only cost you more because Denny already takes the low quote. If biodiesel's cheaper, he buys that. If regular diesel's cheaper, he buys that. And it's lately it's been flip-flopping. So you can't save any money because we're taking low right now. This says even when it isn't low price, we'll still keep buying it up to a certain level. And I was kind of surprised that Gary or somebody didn't sign it for or against it, because do we want other departments to start bringing in resolutions of this nature where we don't take the low quotes? I mean, a lot of departments up to a certain monetary level don't get formal bids. You know, they just call around. I don't know if they do it on different supply items or whatever. But this has got budgetary implications, doesn't it? And doesn't it increase the budget for, you know,
I'm going to ask Denny Osgood to come in and explain, because I'm not clear when I hear Leon say one thing and Mr. Geary say another thing. So I want to hear from the guy who really knows.
What was your question?
The question is, Denny, when you call around for fuel, do you always take the lowest quote?
That's been our practice because that's the purchasing rules. We always take the
Okay, so you couldn't be spending any less money than you're doing now on the quotes, because we always take the low bid. Is that
not as long as bio stays the lowest price?
Right, right. But what we're doing now, we always take the low quote.
That's correct.
And this resolution says we're not always going to take that.
What I'm reading here is it says, provided that the cost of biodiesel fuel does not exceed the cost of grade 2 diesel fuel with no additive by an amount of 3% per gallon. So it could cost that gap additional. Is that
right?
Primary? Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Is that about, what is that, 12 cents a gallon? Or
based on $4 a gallon diesel. Oh.
Any rough guess, Danny, how many gallons of fuel we would go through a year?
That's at approximately 120,000 gallons.
Oh, there. Okay. That is the full amount.
That's probably a little bit strong, but
okay.
All depends on your winter and how much you're running those trucks and things.
Okay.
So, but that's a pretty close average.
And Denny, can you stay there, because there are other hands in case there are some questions. Chuck Spiker, you were next.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I support biodiesel. Ralph has pretty much said what I have confidence. I think the committee has confidence in Denny. He's going to be a 37-year employee, and that's why I oppose. I don't oppose biodiesel. But I want the department head, I don't want to micromanage them and tell them they have to do this. I want them to use their individual what's the best for the county. And that's always what I found that Denny has done, and I think he'll continue to do that. But this one says that you can go higher price, and if we start doing that, you better have a good... I like the farmers, too. I have breakfast with them every morning up in Holman. And I talk to them about this a little bit, too, and sometimes they get locked in the prices that are... And Mr. Paff knows that a lot bit more than I do. But I supported it. I don't oppose the biodiesel, but I want to support the department head. And Denny, I know, he doesn't want to take a stand one way or the other. But I just want to show my confidence in him and the staff of the Highway Department. Thank you.
Don Mina.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think the issue is that we don't have enough fuel available on our own. And if we did like Brazil and cut off the total importing of fuel from Europe because they are making their own, that would help bring our prices down. We need to develop a supply of either ethanol or biodiesel and using other things other than corn. And when we do that, the price will come down, and we don't have to be competitive like we are now.
Tom Rauch.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to go back to a point in the second whereas and ask for Denny's input if he's seen any change or effect on the operation of the vehicles using biodiesel. Here it says that the expectation is increased lubricity with less engine wear and cleaner engines, which, in fact, for that price of the biofuel helping to clean out the fuel systems might, in fact, result in some perhaps unquantifiable cost savings in regular routine maintenance on those engines.
Okay, this increased lubricity, that was what was taught to us when we got into the avenue of attempting to use biodiesel. We fortunately haven't had to tear down any of our engines. That's when you're really going to find how clean they are in there. We haven't noticed where some of the dirtier engines, but if you start using bio, it'll start cleaning your engine, it'll clog your fuel filters. We haven't noticed any increase in filter usage, so evidently our engines were running pretty clean. But in talking to my shop foreman, he figures there's probably a little less soot in the exhaust since we've been using bio. But other than that, our engines run fine on the ultra-low sulfur diesel, the new product that's out, which is required. That's a lot cleaner diesel than the old number two used to be. So the industry is striving to make all fuels efficient and as clean as possible. So
it's possible there's a benefit, but in your work with your shop foreman, et cetera, you can't say that you've
so far. I
can't
say
that.
Definitely yes.
We, yeah. Okay.
This is our trucks have been running fine on either one.
Okay.
So.
Thank you.
Any further discussion? Brad Paff.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I do strongly support this resolution. I also do want to remind all county board members that this board in the past has passed, work creating the Joint Committee on Sustainability and to try and, to have our county move forward with some environmental green initiatives. I can say, as a member of that committee, the Joint Committee on Sustainability, in which the City of La Crosse and La Crosse County are together. There are efforts moving forward on biodiesel purchases. The City of La Crosse is attempting to begin purchasing biodiesel as well. I ask you just to think about the bigger picture. I mean, a lot of this stuff is based upon spot markets. But what we need to also recognize the fact is that we want to be able to move forward on alternative fuel. And, this isn't the end-all and be-all. I acknowledge that. But it is a start. And it does send the right signals. You've heard from Denny at the County Highway Crew that they have not seen any adverse impacts at all. In fact, they may have seen positive improvements to the performance of their vehicles. And not only that, this also does send the right signal for other government policymakers. And that is that there is a way that we can, slowly and surely demonstrate to the public, that we are serious about trying to find alternative fuels. So for a variety of reasons, I do encourage this body to consider this resolution and vote for in the affirmative. Thank you.
Any further discussion? All in favor of the resolution say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no?
No.
The noes are Ray Ebert. Well, we got too many of them. Let's do it on the computer. On the computer, yes if you are in favor, no if you are opposed to the resolution. The resolution has passed on a vote of 22-8. Mr. Spiker, I think you have one more left.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Thank you. Item 45-5, the committee voted at recess, met at recess, voted unanimously for the resolution. Approval of water and sewer utility service easement requested by Dan and Linda Meeker. Whereas Dan and Linda Meeker have requested a perpetual easement across La Crosse County property in the southwest corner, Southworth, Noshonic Park, in the order to provide water and sanitary sewer utility service to their residents and in Linda's Bakery, which we all know, on the west side of Highway 16. And now, therefore, be resolved, La Crosse County Board does hereby authorize County Board Chair to sign the necessary documents to grant Dan and Linda Meeker a perpetual 20-foot wide water and sewer utility easement through the southwest corner of Swartworth, Neshonic Park after approval by the Corporation Council. Be it further resolved that La Crosse County shall not be responsible for any cost or expense for granting the easement, and any work performed to provide utilities shall be the responsible of Dan and Linda Meeker. Fiscal note, project costs for this easement and for utilities shall be the responsibility of Dan and Linda Meeker with no cost to La Crosse County. Any disturbance of La Crosse County property shall be returned to the condition as existed prior to disturbance. I move for approval, Mr. Chairman.
Moved by Mr. Spiker, seconded by Dennis Montai. Discussion. Who negotiated a perpetual easement to Linda's Bakery without a perpetual supply of donuts for county board members? Oh, yes, you learned that. Thank you. Discussion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Carried unanimously. Bobby, you're okay on that one? All right. That it for you, Mr. Spiker? That gets us down to items for future agendas. Anybody have any? Mr. Ebert.
Yes, could we please get an update on the Tri-County ambulance service?
I hope to have something for you at the next meeting. I know I've been saying we're getting close for a long time. I'll tell you that again right now. We're getting close, but I hope to have more for you at the next meeting. Bob, are you moving to adjourn or you have an announcement? Okay, we may have an announcement first. Mr. Geary?
No, I just had a question. Is there anything going on with Park Plaza? If there isn't, we don't need a report, but if there is, we haven't had a report on that in a while, so I don't.
Let's throw that on the agenda for next time,
yeah,
too,
just
to
if there's nothing, don't bring it up, but I just.
Well, even if there's not much there, I mean, we should at least keep the board apprised. Jim Burns?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I noticed on the resolutions this evening, the resolution format has changed slightly, and I was wondering if Mr. O'Malley could give us some information on why the format has changed. I guess I'm referring to the bottom of the resolution where it says the county administrator, financial director, and corporate counsel either approve or not approve the resolution.
I'll give you the explanation of that.
I noticed that every single resolution tonight did not have any approved or disapproved.
It was originated
resolution
by the executive committee on the theory that these are policy issues which board members should be making and staff members really should be doing staff things, administrative type things. And so to have that better separation and to keep them in their area and not getting muddied up in the political or the policy things, the reviewed only to at least look at it to see are there any issues that go beyond policy to affecting, you know, say, a financial matter for Gary or a legal issue. That came up a few months ago. If Bill sees something that, wait a minute, this is not a good idea from a legal standpoint, they'll be checking those. But the presumption from this point forward is going to be that it is reviewed only. The policy is our decision. If you want to know their opinion, you can certainly ask them. But instead of having it as a matter of record that, you know, this is their endorsement one direction or the other, it's going to normally say reviewed only if it's a policy matter.
Okay, so when would any of those three in the bottom approve or not approve something? I guess I'm still very unclear in terms of how they're going to exercise that discretion. When are they going to approve it, and when are they just going to read it?
It's a work in progress. And
maybe it's something that we should put on a future policy agenda. I didn't hear about it. I guess it was in the executive committee, and I guess it wasn't brought to the board, which is fine. But maybe we need to look at other things that we can do to maybe do a better job with the resolutions, the format of the resolution. Maybe there's something else that we can change too, or not change.
I think that sounds like a good idea. We can put that on for policy planning in the next month or so. I like that idea. And, you know, we've been talking about this at executive committee and, you know, a little bit feeling our way through. But I think hearing from the whole board on what you think of that approach. Mr. Spiker, did I see your hand kind of going up?
Yeah, this is a subject you and I talked about under the same one. It's item 2-02, meeting general rules of the county board, item 7B. All resolutions shall be reviewed and approved or disapproved by the county administrator, auditor, finance director prior to introduction for the county board. That's what I was talking about earlier. Well, what's your interpretation of that? That's a board rule now.
My interpretation is that we need to change the ordinance if we're going to do this. That's my interpretation.
So that would be the policy discussion then when we decide to change the ordinance.
There you go. I mean, what we're trying to do is to make this more responsive to where we think the board is at on things, and if you disagree, then we need to do it differently. So I think Mr. Burns' idea of having the full board talk about, you know, the parameters of where we're going to do this makes more sense. Other announcements before we adjourn? Arlene Benrod?
Well, I'd like to say something. I'm happy to be back on the board and serving. I couldn't figure out why I did not get any of the resolutions about 5 minutes ago. I said to Roger, do I have a locker out there? So I'll pick them up when I leave. Thank you.
Jill Billings.
I'd like to officially thank Jim Spropoulos for fixing my computer board here. If anyone else has a ragged, old, messy one and they would like that fixed, talk to him. He did a beautiful job.
So anybody got ragged edges, go talk to Jim Spropoulos. Jerry Sobranek. Seconded by Bob Kyle. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed no. Carried unanimously.